Before I ask the Honorable Judge Dale Pacelle to swear you all in, I want to direct your attention to the documents on your desk with the pink instruction sheet. Two of those documents are for you, the card you sign and keep, but the oath itself you do not sign until after you've been sworn in. And once the judge has sworn you in, then everybody can sign that oath and pass it down because the judge will need to sign it as well. Go ahead.
I state your name.
Having been elected to the office
of County Board Supervisor,
district,
and then give your district number,
district,
swear or affirm
that I will support the Constitution of the United States
and the Constitution of the State of Wisconsin,
and will faithfully and impartially
discharge the duties of said office,
to the best of my ability,
so help me God.
All
right, if all of you want to sign that, and then I understand they're going to be passed down and collected, and I'll sign them as well.
The next item on the agenda is the election of officers. So I'm going to open nominations for County Board Chair. Does anyone have a nomination for County Board Chair? Arlene?
Yes, I'd like to nominate Steve Doyle.
And that's been seconded by Monica Cruz. Are there any more nominations for County Board Chair? Are there any more nominations for County Board Chair? Hearing none, all those in favor of Steve Doyle for County Board Chair, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Passed unanimously. Okay. The next seat open for nominations is First Vice Chair. Are there any nominations for First Vice Chair, Roger? There's a nomination for Tara, seconded by Brad Conkle. Are there any other nominations for County Board for First Vice Chair? Any other nominations for First Vice Chair? Seeing none, all those in favor of Tara Johnson for First Vice Chair, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Congratulations, Tara. The next position open is the Second Vice Chair. Are there any nominations for Second Vice Chair? Charles?
I nominate Jill Billings.
There's a nomination for Jill and a second by Brad Conkle. Are there any other nominations for Second Vice Chair? Are there any other nominations for Second Vice Chair? Seeing none, all those in favor of Jill Billings for Second Vice Chair, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Well, then there's no ballots to count, and the chair can take his chair.
Well, I would like to start by thanking people for their support. We have a lot of challenges ahead of us for the next 2 years. We have a tough budget coming up. We have a lot of important and difficult decisions to make. And I've been asked on a number of occasions, what are these next 2 years going to be like? And my answer has been, very consistently, it's going to be difficult, but we've got a good group of people. And I think we're up to that challenge, and I look forward to working with every one of you. So congratulations to all of you on your elections, and let's go to work. We're going to start with the Corp Council report. Bill is going to talk about a couple of different things, abstaining and then also Corp Council duties. So go ahead, Bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Can we bring up the PowerPoint first? Yes, it is. I'm just not standing close enough. I will do that. I will stand close. Presentation really is a result of staff working with Mr. Doyle and trying to come up with the new voting system. And one of the issues that they called me down to discuss with them was abstaining. And I kind of gave them a quick answer on one issue, and Mr. Doyle asked me to make this presentation so that the entire board could learn a little bit more about this subject. And in doing some additional research, I found that it's a little bit more confusing than we initially thought. So I guess I don't have a – oh, is this the clicker? Yeah. Well, how do you – is it the top button?
Sometimes it doesn't.
All right. I'll let you do it. I've given you this presentation, but I think that it came in your packet. But first, the voting issue, and we've talked about this in the past, that really it's one of the primary duties that you have as a county board supervisor is to vote yes or no on the issues that are presented to you. You do have the right of the First Amendment of the United States Constitution, which gives you the right of free speech, and it also gives you the right to refrain from speaking. So you cannot be compelled in this legislative setting to vote yes or no. You can abstain or not vote at all. So that's recognized in our county code. And it's also in the Roberts Rules of Order. Next one, please. This comes from the Wisconsin statutes as to how you exercise your county board powers. And as you know from many of you that we have both ordinances and resolutions. We tend to use ordinances when it's going to be a more permanent kind of regulation. Resolutions tend to be more temporary, something that we need to deal with immediately. But Wisconsin statutes indicate that you need a majority vote in most cases to pass a resolution, or where a larger vote is required, either by Wisconsin statutes or by county ordinances. The next slide, please. The next couple of slides indicate a few of the areas where a larger vote is required. And we've encountered these over the past several years. The first one being if you change the appropriations in your budget. And those we will identify by a two-thirds vote of the entire membership of the board. That's a statute. And the issuance of debt is the other one. And we discussed that with the last large issuance. And the statute requires a three-quarters vote if you exceed the debt levy that was set in 1992. And yes, Mr. Bina.
Is that two-thirds and three-quarters those that are present, or is that the total number of board members that you're looking at?
Both of those are the entire membership of the board. In the one statute, it says an entire membership, and in the other statute on the issuance of debt, it says members elect. So that would, in both cases, it would be 35. And we'll talk about the significance of what that larger vote means in regard to abstaining. The next slide. We also have a number of county ordinances, and I don't mean to be all-inclusive with this list. These are just a few examples that I could quickly find just to give you an indication of when a larger vote other than a majority is required. Non-budgeted items, we've kind of taken and listed some additional items in regard to the changing the annual budget, creating new positions where there is not funding from outside sources would be a subsection under that first point. Several years ago, when we talked about the issuance of debt, the board decided by county ordinance that whenever such a resolution came before you, that you wanted to require a two-thirds vote of supervisors present, unless the state law, as we talked about just previously, requires a three-quarters vote. So that two-thirds vote is by your ordinance. And then we have the one that we often encounter, and that's it. With the introduction of an ordinance, you can waive the rule that requires referral to the next meeting and pass an ordinance at the initial introduction by a two-thirds vote of the supervisors present. Okay, next slide, please. In most cases, the resolutions that you pass, and most, if not all, ordinances are passed by a majority vote without qualification, and that means that as long as you have a quorum present, and in this case it would be of 35 members, you have to have more than 50% present to have a quorum, so that would be 18. That's a requirement of any board or committee that you must have a quorum present, and a majority vote of the members present in that quorum then means more than one half of the votes cast, and this is where it gets a little interesting. Robert's rules say that the votes that are excluded are if there are, you know, somebody chooses not to vote, or if they abstain. And of course, you all know by now that you have a third button on your screen when we have a roll call vote that you can vote yes, no, or abstain. So when you abstain, you in effect are voting present. You are not voting. Your vote is not counted. It's going to be a little bit different when we talk about the effect of abstaining when there is a larger vote required. However, by abstaining, if you remain in the room and you push the abstain button, you are still present for the purposes of a quorum. And we haven't had a quorum problem with the county board. Occasionally there's been a quorum problem with committees. So if you stay in the room, you abstain, you are still counted toward a quorum, but your abstaining is not counted as a vote. Okay, next slide, please. Robert's rules, and I've taken this information from Robert's Rules for Dummies. I don't know if you've read these books. They make nice, it's this thing.
What are you implying about the group?
Well, since this is confusing, I thought maybe this would be a little clearer in terms of the information than sometimes Robert's Rules. It gets a little hard to understand. So I've taken this slide from this other book. It is consistent with the Bible that we use, which is the 10th edition, this gold thing. Mine's a little dog-eared, but I see that there's a copy or two out there. So, again, the right to abstain, you have the right to remain neutral by abstaining. They're not counted. We talked about that. However, your decision to abstain may influence the outcome of a vote. And this is the example in the majority without qualification that the normal votes that you take. If there are a third of you present and one abstains, the majority of the 29 is what controls. So at least in this particular author, and I think it's agreed by others, that in where you're talking about a majority vote without qualifications, by abstaining, you in effect are having helped the prevailing side by not voting members have helped the winner. You've reduced, in essence, the number that is required for the prevailing side to be a winner. There's a little difference in the next one, so if you'd go to the next slide. Voting based on members present. Again, this is where we're talking about the two-thirds of the members present, or two-thirds of the entire board, or three-fourths of the entire board. So by abstaining, your vote still isn't counted, but the number that is needed to prevail remains the same. And so in essence, by abstaining, your vote doesn't count, but it has the same effect as being a negative vote. So you have to understand that it would be the same as if we have two-thirds of the members present, and there's at least one of those issues on the agenda tonight. If you don't come to the meeting, that's in essence a no vote. If you leave the meeting, it's a no vote. If you abstain, it's a no vote. It has that effect. So just so that you're aware of that, you have a right to abstain, and that's Robert's rules does not recommend this kind of vote.
Bill, did I hear you say that if you don't come to the meeting, it counts as a no vote? Because I think that's incorrect.
If
it says of members present. Well,
if it's members present, excuse me, you're right. But if it's the members of the entire board, right. I'm sorry, make that clarification. Yes, I didn't mean to confuse that. So thank you for clarifying that. So you have to be aware of the effect that abstaining has on the vote. You have that right, but it does have a negative effect where it's either based on the members present or the entire board.
Bill Brackmiller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was just wondering, Bill, if I understand correctly, let's take back to a majority vote, where
yes.
Some process we're doing requires just a simple majority. And let's say, for the sake of argument, we had that bare minimum quorum, which would be 18 for the full board. So if you vote, if you abstain, you're still present, so the quorum's not, as long as you're still in the room and whatnot.
Right.
So, but if you abstain, then 9 to 8 would be the majority, because the abstention doesn't count toward the 50%, right?
It doesn't count toward the 50%. It just counts for maintaining the quorum.
Right. So 9 to 8 would pass a measure in that.
Yes. That would be 17, yes.
Right. Okay. Thank you.
Yes. Any other questions on that?
Any other questions?
I got a couple more slides.
Jerry Sobranek.
Mr. Chair, I was reading the right to abstain. I don't know what slide was up here. The fourth bullet, it says, for example, if the requirement for adoption is a majority vote, then abstentions have the effect of a vote for the prevailing side. By not voting, members have helped the winner. And now you've just said that an abstention is the same as a no vote.
If you have to differentiate between the majority without qualifications and when a two-thirds vote of either those present or two-thirds vote of the entire board or a larger vote, because then it's a set number. It's of the entire, either those present or the entire board. So if it's two-thirds of the entire board, that number is 24. And whether somebody abstains, their vote isn't counted, that number to pass a resolution or an order, or let's just talk about resolutions because that's usually where it comes up, that number still is 24. That number doesn't change because the vote isn't counted. So in effect, it has the effect of a negative vote.
Okay, and the number doesn't change.
Yeah, it does. That number does change on a majority vote without qualification. You know, the number required to pass, if one abstention, it will drop the total members voting that are eligible to vote by one.
Thank you, Bill.
Any other questions? Okay, keep going.
Next
Bill.
Slide, please. These are some quotes from a decision that Judge Crabb in the U.S. District Court in Madison made in a case involving the city of Madison. In the city of Madison, if you didn't vote yes or no on something back in the 80s, they actually would censure you. And if you got censured for not voting more than once, they would fine you and all that kind of stuff. And so it was kind of an interesting case, because normally the internal workings of a board or legislative body don't normally go to court. But Judge Crabb felt that denying a person their right of free speech under the First Amendment was a constitutional issue, and so she did decide this case, and she basically confirmed what I've just been talking about. Permitting members to abstain is not functionally different from permitting them to vote no. The thing that comes up is, can we force somebody to do this? And basically, Judge Crabb ruled in the next quote that it's really up to the electorate. It's not up to this body to censure or to kick somebody off for not voting, but it's up to the voters. If you're not doing your job by voting on issues, then the voters may take care of that for you. So I thought those quotes were interesting and kind of confirms what I've been telling you and really what Robert's rule says. Next slide, please. Now, this is the other wrinkle in this. On occasion, we have had where there is a vote that somebody might have a direct and personal interest in an issue that comes before the board, and there are some rules about this. And the first one, no member should vote on a question in which they have a direct personal or pecuniary interest not common to other members. That's in Robert's rules. Our own code of ethics prohibits conflicts of interest which might be based on a private or personal financial benefit to either you as supervisors or members of your immediate family. Yes, Jill?
Jill Billings.
Could you please define pecuniary for me?
Financial. Something involving money. Then the third point, I took a look at the Wisconsin Ethics Board opinions to see if they had an opinion on a disqualification of a member of a legislative body when they had a direct and personal or financial interest in the matter, and basically they said that they were disqualified to vote and should not participate in discussions, debates, or votes on the matter. So you have a right to abstain, and you should not vote if it involves you personally. If you would go to the next slide. This is important to understand that the abstention rule is a should rule. Just as you can't be forced to vote, you can't be compelled not to vote. I think we've had that question. If somebody has an interest, can we force them from voting? And the answer is no to either way. So where this would result in problems to you, if you do vote anyway on a matter that has a direct and personal benefit to you or your immediate family member, is you may have violated our ethics code. You may have violated several state statutes and could have issues either in before our ethics board or before the courts. So I would suggest that you, if you have such a matter, that you abstain, don't participate in the discussion or debate, and just an occasion, if it's a serious matter, I would even suggest leaving the boardroom when that discussion occurs.
Well, and I want to emphasize that, and I would say not just in cases of serious matter, in any situation where you may have a conflict of interest and you want to abstain, as part of our new voting system, you should log out and go out into the hall. If you don't log out, you're going to be designated as present here, and it's going to count as if you, and all those things that Bill just said about the effect of abstaining is going to apply in your situation. So if it's something where you should be abstaining, not only go out in the hallway, but also log out, and then you can log back in when you come back in.
Mm-hmm. Another variation of this, on occasion, somebody will abstain, and if we don't know why. You don't have to ever explain your vote, and you can't explain your vote when after a vote's being called for anyway. I mean, during the debates, you can explain why you're voting a certain way, but when the vote is called for, you can't explain your vote. If it's a matter of, for whatever reason, you decide to abstain, the board cannot force you not to discuss the matter. You know, again, I would suggest that you not discuss a matter where there's a direct and personal benefit, but if you just don't know enough about an issue, just don't feel strongly one way or another, just have indifference to, you know, voting yes or no if you abstain, even though you may have asked a question or said something, you know, that is not illegal or in violation of Robert's rules. So it's kind of a self-policing matter. But if you have a personal interest in a matter, be aware that you could have later issues with the ethics board or otherwise. So, next. You do have a right to vote on some issues where there's a self-interest, and one occurred this evening. Probably the chair and first and second vice chair voted for themselves. That is permissible. So you didn't violate any Robert's Rules of Order or any state statutes by voting for yourself. You're fine there. There could be other matters that, you know, if you vote to have a summer picnic, you know, where you all might attend, that's not prohibited by this rule. So. Next. That's it. So if you have any other questions.
Does anybody have any questions on this? All right. Thank you, Bill. That gets us to administrator's report. Steve O'Malley.
Do you want me to do the other one? Or?
Oh, Corp Council duties. Bill, you want to talk about that? Sorry.
I've put in your county board packet some a few items that detail what the Corporation Council duties are. One of them is from the Wisconsin County Officials Handbook. That looks something like that. I put a little yellow highlighter on it, so you can read that. That's I don't know if that book has been given out at various times. I'm not sure if the supervisors that have been around a while have a copy of that, but it includes many of the duties of elected officials and other appointed officers. So that's a summary that appears in that book. The other is from the county ordinance itself, describing my office, and includes a statement of the duties in the ordinance. The one thing I didn't include is a state statute, and just a paraphrase the duties that are set forth in that. I think the question arose as to the resolutions and the reviewing, recommending, or not recommending on resolutions. That's where this issue really came up. In the state statute, it says that the Corporation Council gives advice to the board and other departments, boards, and commissions when requested in all civil matters when the county is interested or relating to the discharge of official duties. And it goes on to say that Corporation Council acts as legislative counsel for the County Board of Supervisors when so authorized by it. If you would then take a look at the excerpt from the county code regarding resolutions, I would direct your attention to subparagraph 7B, and that's the paragraph on how we handle resolutions, and that's where the authority comes from the county board for the county administrator, a finance director, and the Corporation Council to check one of those items on all resolutions, recommended, not recommended, or reviewed only. So I think it's from the state statutes, from the county code, it's my responsibility to take direction from this county board as to what areas you want me to advise you in civil matters, and you have given me that direction through this county ordinance. So we try to carry that out to the best of our ability. That's certainly an item that you can change. There's nothing that says that you have to have somebody in my position doing that. It's totally discretionary on your part, but at least at this point, this board has directed me to do so.
Ralph Geary.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm glad you did this handout, Bill. I understood that we, the county board, by resolution, had you sign these resolutions, recommended, not recommended, or reviewed only. My point is you're treated different than any other department head. Your authority comes from the state. Even in the matter of terminating the department head, he's treated differently than anybody else. My point was, talk to your counterparts. I'm not aware of other counties that have the Corporation Council get involved in the political fray or something and recommend or not recommend resolutions they draft. I thought you were more of a neutral person who made sure we did things that were legally correct and whatever. I don't know what the city attorney does. I'm not aware of any other county that does it. I just said look into it with the other counties and find out if they do it, and if they don't, why don't they?
I'd like to address that because I want to clarify something, because also Gary does initial those. They are not recommending or not recommending them on the basis of a policy decision. Bill looks at it from a legal standpoint, Gary from a financial standpoint. They may have a personal feeling one way or another, but that's not supposed to be what their initials say. Bill's initials would be not recommended, meaning this could get us in legal trouble. He may like it or not like it. That shouldn't be what he bases it on.
Any normal person reading it with a Corporation Council saying recommended or not recommended wouldn't take it that way. He's the Corporation Counselor. Are you telling me he would draft something that was illegal for us? He wouldn't do that because of state law. He's supposed to not do that.
In fact, that is why we started doing that, as one issue came up that he had some concerns about whether it was legal. I mean,
he should not draft anything he doesn't think is legal. He should bring that to the county, to the attention of the county board.
If we direct him to draft it, he would draft it, but then he needs to tell us.
No. If he's Corp Counsel, we direct him to draft something he doesn't think is legal, he should not draft it and inform us immediately of that.
Bill?
Well, you know, that's I think that that's a fine line. The ordinance, if you look at sub A, requires one of four or five of us to draft resolutions. And sometimes I don't agree, and I don't think that they're a good idea, but I strongly believe that supervisors have a right to bring to the board what it is they want the board to consider legislatively. And I think that the issue is, in what format do I tell you that I don't, you know, legally I don't think that this is a good idea. And this was the format that was struck back several years ago when that issue came up. Otherwise, you know, I don't engage in your debate. I respond to questions that are put to me. So, you know, I guess you can disagree with my advice. I mean, that wouldn't be so unusual that a client disagrees with a lawyer's advice. And certainly I recognize that you are the policy setters. And again, mine is only a advice to you in terms of the legal issues that might occur. So take it for what it's worth. You make the policy decision. You pass or not pass a resolution. I don't control that. It's always up to the majority or two-thirds voter or whatever the vote is required for a particular resolution.
Well, I don't think I was ever aware not recommended meant you thought it was illegal, and I don't think most of the county board thought that. If that's what that means and a resolution comes in and you're saying that should be the first thing discussed,
well,
the Corp Counsel should get the floor immediately and explain that to the county board, and that hasn't happened in the past that way.
Well, let me also respond to that one, too, and I'll put two hats on. my hat as a lawyer who has clients and my hat as county board chair. When Bill may say not recommended, that doesn't mean it is illegal. I mean, Bill is not a judge. I have clients all the time that ask me questions, should I do this, should I not do that? And I can say, my legal advice to you is this would be a mistake. That doesn't necessarily mean that it's illegal, but it is legal advice. So illegal is black and white. I mean, I think that would not be so much of an issue as bad legal idea. And then he would explain why he feels it's a bad idea. But again, neither Bill nor Gary nor Steve really are commenting on policy issues, which is for us. Okay. Jim Burns had his hand up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to kind of reiterate what Supervisor Gary mentioned. I see this as two things. We got policy matters and we got legal matters when it comes to the Corporation Council. And I do, when it says recommended, I do take that as it's a sign off on both policy and legal. I mean, that's how I interpret that, or that's I think that's how the public would interpret that. And maybe this is a remedy that would maybe be less confusing for everybody. Maybe we eliminate the recommended and not recommended column, and we just have the reviewed column. So we know that the appropriate people in the county have looked at it, and we know that if there was an issue, they would bring that to our attention. I'm not sure if we need recommended or not recommended. Why can't we just have reviewed? And we're professionals here. If there's a issue or a concern, you certainly would address it with us on the county board floor, right? I mean, that would be your job. That's part of your job as our legal counsel. It's your job to bring these issues to the board. So why can't we just have the reviewed comm only?
Can I just respond? I understand your feelings, Mr. Burns. I guess the issue is we're not a member of the board, and you know, I definitely try to stay out of the debate of issues. You're asking us to participate in a decision like a member of the board, and I think that's what we're trying to differentiate between being a member of the board and being your staff that are advising you on administrative matters, financial matters, or legal matters. If you see that we've checked one of those boxes, you certainly can ask us questions. You know, why did you do that? I mean, then you know that there may be an issue there. And that alerts you that if you feel a need to, you know, why we've recommended something or not recommended something, you can ask us the question. And that kind of, I think, distinguishes us from being a member of the board.
Just to follow up, I appreciate that. I guess, you know, there's we certainly make policy decisions. It's what we do. And I guess when you see recommended by the county administrator, the financial director, and the corporate counsel, you know, you're recommending these policies. I don't know. As a member of the public, I would be really confused.
Ray Ebert.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Shepard and I have discussed this personally before. To me, if it's legal, it would be reviewed. If it's something that is not correct, not recommended. The only time I can see a recommended from the corporate counsel, if it has to do with legal advice in his area of expertise. I don't consider him an area of expertise if it comes to a financial thing, like Gary would be on a financial. I think if it has something to do with law or a suit pending against us, then I think it's appropriate. Other than that, I believe it should just be reviewed if it's legal or not, if it's something not legal, or if it's something in your area of expertise, which is the law, then a not recommended. Thank you, sir.
Brad Conkle.
I guess I don't understand why this is exactly that big of an issue. You know, as someone mentioned earlier that, you know, we are professionals. We were elected to serve our constituency. Each and every one of us has our own individual opinions and the capability of thinking for ourselves. And so I don't think it's an issue that, you know, Mr. Shepard or Steve O'Malley writes, you know, recommended on a sheet of paper. If you have a question, they're always there to answer it. Neither of them are really stepping into our debates unless we ask them a specific question about a resolution or an ordinance. I mean, it's not necessarily a change that I think we need to take into effect. If we have reviewed only, then we're going to be asking questions of each and every one of them, well, do you support this? Is this, does this make sense? Is this resolution written, you know, is this resolution written in a legal manner? Is it good legal terminology? Those kinds of things. If we have recommended on there, we know they've taken a peek at and they agree with what is presented to us. So further than that, I don't think it's an issue.
Just one reminder for people, there are three columns, reviewed only, recommended, and not recommended. And we've on a number of occasions, or I've on a number of occasions when we've been at these meetings, have pointed out that my belief is that most of the time, at 9 times out of 10 or more, they should be initialing the reviewed only and not the recommended or not recommended. However, in some situations, let's say that we have a claim against the county and there's a resolution to say we should do this with it. I would expect Bill to put recommended, okay? That's not just a policy thing. That is a legal thing. There might be some financial thing where Gary needs us to know, you better do this. It should say recommended. But most of the time, you're not going to see any initials in either of those two columns of recommended or not recommended. It's going to always be, almost always be in the column that says reviewed only. Okay? Is there a full moon tonight or something? We're starting off on a real interesting note here. Anybody else have anything on this one? All right. Thank you, Bill. All right, now Steve O'Malley.
Okay, just a couple of quick updates just to follow up. Just as by way of report, John Mettinger asked last week for me to check on WCA district meetings. There is a district meeting for the Western District Tuesday, April 27th. Please work with the chair's office. Margaret can sign you up for that. That's Tuesday, April 27th. That's the Western District of WCA from 3 to 6 p.m. And a lot of times you can pool rides. You also have in your agenda a packet, the local government by local government center, county officials workshop. Again, work with the chair's office if you're interested in going. Whether you've been a longtime supervisor or brand new, there's always information you can learn from that. In addition to that, and on your desk is the actual retreat agenda for this Thursday. This is on your agenda. The agenda for the day is going to be very interactive and a lot less reporting. We went back through your evaluations from the last retreat we did, and it was pretty significant that most people wanted a bit more time for interaction in small groups and setting priorities. So I think you're going to find it a valuable time. The reporting will be very brief, just give you some overview of the budget challenges and those types of things, and then breaking up into small groups on priorities once you understand some of the projected budget challenges and those issues, as well as an interactive approach on trying to revamp and improve the county's website and the county board webpage so that we can get an idea of what constituents need and want to know about the county from the web. If you look at the attachment, there are a number of websites you can visit if you have time and are interested. Those of you that accept email, you can actually just click on those links and see some of the other counties that have interactive websites around the county board page as well as the front page, and we'll walk you through a process during the retreat to do that. While you're thinking about it, I would like to see a show of hands of people that don't expect to attend the retreat. We always start with a lunch, and so we like to get a good count for that. And again, this is a chance to really dialogue with other board members, but if you we could see a hand, a show of hands of who's not going to be able to make the retreat.
I'm counting 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Okay.
Okay. Mr. Gary, do you have a question?
I'm not going to be there, but when they set the retreat, I thought the campus plan was going to be one of the topics. Is it on there?
It's listed
oh, it's
on there.
There.
Okay. We're going to go over that.
Anybody else have any questions? Okay, keep going, Steve.
Okay, proclamation, National Volunteer Week 2010, celebrating people in action, April 18th through 24th, 2010. Whereas April is Volunteer Recognition Month, and whereas many of our citizens spend hours volunteering their time and energy to improve La Crosse County services and programs, and whereas it is important to acknowledge the effort volunteers have put forth to strengthen our county's communities and services, and whereas celebrating people in action, volunteers can make a difference in countless ways, and whereas La Crosse County has provided opportunities for people to become actively involved in enhancing their communities, and whereas citizens of La Crosse County have consistently been involved as volunteers through Hillview and Lakeview Healthcare Centers, the La Crosse County Aging Unit, UW Extension, libraries, elections, County Jail, Health and Human Services, and many councils, commissions, and committees. Now, therefore, as members of the La Crosse County Board, do hereby proclaim the week of April 18th through 24th, 2010, as Volunteer Recognition Week.
Moved by Margaret Wood, seconded by Roger Plesha. Any discussion? All in favor say aye. Opposed, no. Carried unanimously. The next item is the starting time for meetings. Under our ordinance, we need to set that at this meeting, this being the organizational meeting. Is there a motion on setting the time? Jerry Sobranek.
I move that the meeting be kept the same as 6 o'clock on the third Thursday.
Is there a second? Seconded by John Menninger. Any discussion on that? You can be here at a.m. The rest of us will be here at p.m. All right. All in favor say aye. Opposed, no. Carried unanimously. Communications and announcements on the south end, I'm saying this especially for the new members, on the south end of the room is a bulletin board that has communication that comes in over the course of the month. I would ask people when you come in the evening or when you leave at the end of the meeting to take a look at there to see any important things that may have come up during the course of the month. So draw that to your attention. Next thing. It may seem like just yesterday that we started hearing this. I just have a couple questions, but in fact, it has been 20 years that we've had Don Vina with us. And we want to recognize him for his many years of service to the county. So, Don, if you can come forward.
Just no speech.
presented with appreciation to Donald D. Vina for 20 years of dedicated service to La Crosse County Board 2010. Don, congratulations on 20 years. And you can make a comment.
You know, for the last 3 days, I was writing my speech, but I decided not to read a speech. But I guess I didn't plan on being here for 20 years when I started. But one thing led to another, and you just get wrapped up in the system. And I guess the system has changed considerably in the last 20 years. And I'm assuming we have a lot of aspiring county board members sitting over here tonight by looking the crowd over. You know, we started out with this county board, and I guess Chuck Spiker was here before I was, but we had the county board chairman running the show in the county in years gone by. We had a finance and personnel committee which made all the decisions, and we basically were told we were micromanaging, and I'm not going to tell you where that came from. And then we went to an administrative coordinator and then an administrator, and then where do we go from here, you know? Didn't know anything that I haven't seen as an exec yet, so maybe that's the next thing on the list. But I appreciate all of you. We don't communicate too well because we don't see each other. We got our own committees. But I enjoy being here, and I thank you for the plaque, for everybody concerned, and I'll try to keep on doing my best. So thank you much.
Congratulations again, Don. Linda's going to talk about the new voting system update.
Well, some of you used this already last month, and some of you haven't. As you can see, your screen has changed. When you came in, you had your login button, and that was all you had to do. And the system is taking care of that. When you leave the room and log out, which I ask you to please do, and I've seen that some have already done so this morning, and I'm very impressed with that. This evening, it's not morning. And and when you log out at night, or if you have to leave early and log out, the system records those times, so I don't have to wonder if you were here for a voice vote or not, which is very helpful and certainly makes the minutes more accurate. Other than the logging in, the logging out, and the voting yes or no, there's really not much responsibility that you have. We hope that the screen is clear and easy to use. You do still have your links on the left if you want to look up the minutes on our website and that sort of thing. And the one other thing, where's the shutdown button? Mm-hmm. Thank you. One thing that we've never asked you to do, but some have taken upon themselves to do anyway, is to shut down the computers when you leave at night. It doesn't seem like a big deal, but if we have to shut down 35 of them after you're gone, it takes quite a while. So there are instructions on your desk for shutting down. It's not a complicated process. If you have trouble with it and can't make it work, that's fine. It's not the end of the world. We'll take care of it for you. But if you could think to log out and then shut down, that would be very helpful. One other little glitch that we had last time. By the time Jerry Sobranek made the motion to adjourn, some of you got click happy and logged out right then and there, and I hadn't closed the meeting yet. And so we hadn't actually voted on it. And it wasn't a big deal. It just made a number of things I had to go in and clean up. So if you can wait till the vote, until you're actually ready to stand up and leave before you click the log out button at the end of the meeting, that would be helpful. Thank you.
Unless we do it by voice vote, which is going to be the norm.
Well, they're still going to log out. Well, that's true. We'll do a voice vote.
So it'll be a little less of a problem for you. Well, but they should still wait.
But they still should wait. Right. It's the log out thing that got in the way.
Okay.
Thank you for your great participation.
Linda, do you want to cover the next two things, too? Actually, the next three things?
Well, the second item is supervisors' business cards and letterhead. One of the new supervisors was interested in those, and so we checked to see how that is handled, and we found that our printing department, Mike McGuire, is the person to see if you're interested in having business cards or stationery with letterhead for your county board supervisor position. You, of course, have to pay for it, and if you choose not to use him and you want to go to an outside vendor, that's your option, but he has everything all set up and it's all uniform, so if you're interested in business cards or letterhead, see our printing department, Mike McGuire. The next are a number of items that were in your packets when you got them. Some new forms that have to be, they're not new, some forms that have to be filled out every year to keep the auditors happy. One is the conflict of interest statement, the other is the ethics statement. There's also a form in there for the public directory. As you probably remember, anybody who is an elected county board supervisor must publish their name and address. The rest is optional. Unless you've chosen to have the county internet, and if that's the case, we do ask that it be published. Our corporation counsel has determined that that's no longer private now that it's a county email. So anything else, your fax number, your business phone, your home email, anything else that you do or do not want published in the directory, be sure to indicate that on the form. We ask for that information even if you don't want it in the directory, because it helps us get a hold of you if we need to for some reason. It's important that you remember to sign that form and that you remember to circle yes or no. Just if it's just signed, we still don't know anything. And if any of the information on there is incorrect or missing, feel free to correct it or add it. There was a sheet in your packet of asking whether you wanted to receive hard copies of the minutes. Some of you do currently and some of you don't, but I just wanted to give everybody the opportunity to make any changes to that policy, whatever they choose to have. I know that we're trying to go green, and I know that we have more and more information on the website for that reason, and so there may be some of you who were getting hard copies who no longer need them, or the other way around. So if you would please fill out on that form what you want, that's how we will do it for the next year. There's another form in there that shows if I have your vehicle insurance on file. If your name's not on that list and if you want to be reimbursed for mileage, you do need to be sure that you or your insurance agent give us the documentation that we need. It has to have your term limits on it, I mean your term dates on it, the policy dates, and the liability limit of 100 to 300. I'm thinking there was something else I wanted to ask that wasn't in there, but I don't remember what it was. So, does anybody have any questions on the paperwork?
Turn it into the clerk's office. Well, actually, it would be really good is if you bring it with you on Thursday. We'll just collect it then. That'll make it convenient. If you don't have, you don't remember to bring it on Thursday, get it in as soon as possible. The vehicle insurance, you cannot get any county reimbursement for travel unless we have that on file. So if you don't turn it in and you wonder why you didn't get a check, that will be your answer why. So try to remember that. Jeff Schrader, did you have your hand up?
I did. Thank you. If we elect to receive the minutes and everything via the internet, does that open our home systems up to the public?
No, because that would come from the clerk's office, and they would already have that information archived. Any emails that you get that go through the county, such as from a county department, is automatically going to be archived, whether it was sent or received by that department, so you wouldn't have to worry about that.
Jeff, are you talking about emails or just accessing the internet, the website?
No, if you would send, are you saying that you archive those and we access them that way, or you send those electronically to us?
If we have sent you an email from the county, from one of the county departments, to even your personal email address, that will already be archived at the county. So if anybody would do an open records request asking for any emails on such and such a topic, for example, open records request would be fulfilled at this end by the county saying, yes, we sent to Jeff Schrader at his personal email address this information. So the minutes, whether you access them online or have them emailed to you, that wouldn't make any difference. You would not change anything just by receiving it. If you use your personal email address for sending emails to people, that's a different story now, Jeff. So keep in mind that would open it up for public record requests.
Well, that's what I was asking. If they were sent to me, then there's no access.
Bill, do you have any concern about people just receiving minutes and that opening up their email?
Can I butt in and say that I'm not going to send anybody minutes? The minutes are on the website. You can access the internet and look at them anytime. Minutes can get very lengthy. You wouldn't want attachments of that size sent to any email address.
And I was referring beyond minutes to things like when I ask my office to send out things, like if something big happens, we have an accident in the jail or an emergency in the county, that type of thing, that we want to get out, whatever email address we send it to is not going to be a problem for the open records because it comes from here. Audrey Cotter?
It's my understanding that any email that is related to county or city business is subject to open records requests.
That is
irrespective
correct.
Of whose or what computer it's on.
That's correct, but my comment was in terms of how we fulfill that open records request. Something sent to your personal email address from the county, our IT department would be able to produce that.
Yeah.
You would not have to pull it off of your computer.
Yeah, but we have to be careful. Anything we put on, even on our personal computers.
You start sending stuff from that personal address, now you've basically said this is public.
Yeah. Thank you.
Leon Paff.
Thank you. Just one quick question on code of ethics statement. Holding an officer directorship in a business, does something like the West Salem Co-op qualify? Should that be listed, or does that not list? I have part ownership, Bill? But I'm also a director.
If it exceeds more than 10% of the ownership, then you should list it. If it's something less than that, you don't need to.
But it says 10% or 5,000. It doesn't say necessarily just 10%. I don't know. I don't own 10%. But you may have a stock and value of over 5,000.
That may be that 5,000. I don't know if that's a.
That's what it says on here, Bill.
Auditor's request. I guess it was an auditor's request. It's not a code of ethics issue. It's an auditor's request. So if it's on there, then I guess that's what the auditor is asking for. Yes.
So in my particular position, you would list director of West Salem Co-op. Yes or no?
If it meets one of those thresholds, yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Maureen Friedland.
Oh, I just wanted to say that while you're orienting people to the room, that in the corner over here we have a can for recycling aluminum soda cans, and also we have a container over here for paper that will be shredded, so you can get rid of your paper here.
Thank you.
Okay, and can I also ask the question, can we turn in these forms if we've already completed them so we don't lose them between now and Thursday?
Turn them in tonight if you want.
Okay, thank you.
Sure. Arlene Bender, but I think I jumped over you. Did you still have your hand up for a question? No? Okay.
No, I'll wait till my report, conference report.
All right, thanks. All right, is that it for you then, Linda?
Yes.
Okay, I have a few things that I want to mention. first of all, as people have been on the board for a while know, I teach a class at the university, and as part of that class, we do a jail tour every semester. And the next one that we're doing, I'm mentioning it here, is because if anybody is interested in accompanying us, you are welcome to do so. It is a public tour. That'll be this Saturday at 1:30. If you are interested, we're not able yet to get into the new edition. That's not open yet for that purpose. It will be in the fall, though. But if you've not toured the jail and are interested, be there no later than 1:30 at the north door of the courthouse and jail building. We will go in at 1:30. It takes about an hour, and anybody on the board is welcome to join us. Jerry Sobranek.
Would it be possible for you to arrange a tour for us to Grand River Station?
We can check into that, see what the possibilities are. We don't have any direct control over that, but let me see what I can come up with. Okay. And speaking of Jerry Sobranek, one of the issues that he always asked me to mention, and I think is a good thing to point out, and that has to do with attire for county board meetings. We have two main meetings per month in this room. One is the county board meeting, and the other is policy planning. And we've tended to treat them somewhat differently. The county board meeting is a more formal meeting. Policy planning is like a committee of the whole and is less formal. So, for example, when I call on people tonight, it's, you know, Mr. Smith, Ms. Smith, that type of thing. When I call on you at policy planning, it's more, you know, John, Mary, that kind of thing. And I think in terms of attire, that's also something to keep in mind. We are being filmed. We are going to be shown, on local access television. I don't really think we've had any problems in that regard that I can recall in recent years, but it is a good thing to keep in mind that, you know, we want to, give a good impression to the public that we take our job seriously, and I think attire is part of that. The other part that I know people have mentioned in that regard is please refrain from eating while you're in here. It kind of messes things up, and it also distracts from the discussion, and I think we talked about that a few months back. Along the same lines, issue of decorum, and with our new members, when I talked to them over the last few days, I mentioned that really has not been a problem that we've had. People do tend to have vigorous debate here, but very respectful debate. And I don't want to mention any names, but a former mayor's father called a future state representative a pissant one time, and I think that was the last time that I ever heard that word being used in this chamber. And he was a character in himself, so, but I don't want to mention any names. So. His son is much more self-controlled, so we haven't had that issue. But again, I don't by any means want to say that people should feel reluctant to debate an issue. That is certainly why we're here, so very much feel welcome to do that. Next thing, on the east side of this building is a parking spot that has County Board Chair and County Administrator listed on it. If there is not a car there and you are here, you're for a meeting or you pick up something or whatever the case may be, go ahead and use that. Whether you have a county sticker or not, it's my position that is available for any county board member who is here on business. I mean, if you're here to pay your taxes, probably should put money in the meter, but if you're here on county business and there's nobody in that spot, it's fair game. It's yours, so go ahead and use it. Committees, I'll be putting out the list of committee appointments. I'll be giving it out on Thursday at the retreat. You'll notice on the agenda for tonight the Health and Human Services Board is listed. Those appointments are listed, and that is because that is a statutory committee, and those actually are designated terms, which don't necessarily coincide with ours, but that's why that is listed there. One of the appointments that we are filling tonight is an opening on Cooley Cap. Monica Cruz is going to be appointed to, but there's actually two openings. And so if anybody else is interested in being on Cooley Cap, talk to me, and we'll take care of that appointment at our next meeting. Last thing I wanted to mention is on the agenda for the retreat is this idea of talking about how best to get our message out to people, how to let them know what we're doing, learn as much as possible about the county. In other words, the transparency, the consumer friendly type of approach. And I know Steve put together a list of some website examples to look at to see what other counties are doing. I would encourage you between now and Thursday's meeting to take a look at some of those to get some ideas what other counties are doing. You're certainly not restricted to that list, but those are some suggestions that he has of ones that he thinks are pretty good and again user friendly. So we want to try to make the county as accessible as possible for the public and really want your input in how best we can do that. So those are – oh, wait. Last thing is I'm going to ask Linda to pass this around. As I mentioned before, legislative and law enforcement center construction committees are open membership. Anybody who wants to be on them can be. If we have two people, that's the committee. If we have 35 people that want to be on those, that's the committee. So I'm passing it around. If you are interested in being on either of those committees, just mark off that you are interested, and you will get meeting notices. If you can't make all of them, that's not a problem. But if you want to be on there, go ahead and you're automatically put on if you've checked your name. All right. I think that is all that I have there. Vicki Burke.
It is important, Mr. Chairman, that they be designated and come to the committee meetings because of the quorum. So, I mean, it's not a case of you put your name down, you want to be on the committee, and then you show up if you like.
Okay, that's a good point. If you don't think you're going to be there most of the time, then don't sign up. You're certainly welcome to attend at any point, but, yeah, don't sign up if you don't think you can be there. And that does remind me it's a reminder for all county board members. If you are not on a committee, and say this, Dan's not here right now, but Bill, I would mention this to you in particular as a new member. If you're not on a committee, you are still welcome to come to the committee meeting, whether you're a member or not. And if that committee goes into closed session, you still can stay. By virtue of being a county board member, you automatically have the right to be at any of our meetings, whether you are on the committee or not on the committee, even if it's closed session, and you have the right to talk at those meetings. So I want to make sure all members are aware of that. Just because you're not on a committee doesn't mean that we don't want you there. We certainly want the input of everybody who's interested in attending. So. All right. I saw some other hands. Margaret Wood.
Thank you. In cleaning out old county email, I came across a note from Marion that said we were not required to be at planning, that was not a required meeting.
That's
changed.
I always
thought it was.
That if that was what it was, it's not that way anymore.
Okay. So that is one of those meetings where all of us are
okay.
Given agendas and
what Linda pointed out is that when we originally started doing those policy planning meetings, they were more presentation of information and so forth. We were never taking votes. That's kind of evolved where occasionally now we do take votes. So they are required meetings.
Thank you.
Okay. Other questions or comments people have? Okay, let's go on to supervisor reports. Anybody have any supervisor reports? Arlene Benrood.
Thank you, Chairman. Yesterday I attended Wisconsin County Highway Association in Wausau. Dennis Osgood, our highway commissioner, came to our meeting. We discussed constitutional amendments, and we met the Monroe commissioner, and we wrote up with him, so it didn't cost us any gas. And usually that's what I do. I drive 80 miles and hop in his car and go to the meeting. So instead of 300 miles, I save that every month.
I thought you were going to say 80 miles an hour.
Oh, I never speed. It costs too much money. I know it. Okay. And also the other one, in all of your packets, you all got a green folder, and it's on ITPEC, and please take the time to read it. It's what is ITPEC? It will explain to you, and it says ITPEC has been working for you. You just didn't know, just don't know it. I think that would be very important. It will answer any question that anybody has. And as far as that goes, it's no cost to La Crosse County. There's four of us that ride together, and WCA pays one driver, and they pay for our lunch. So I want to let you know we're saving the county some money. And thank you very much.
Thank you. One thing just occurred to me as I looked around the room. I noticed that there's a couple people missing, and I want to point out some people who are missing in particular. Mr. Ferries had to leave. He's also on Alaska City Council tonight. It's also their organizational meeting, and he needed to go up there to get sworn in, so that's why he's not here. Dennis Montai up in West Salem, same story up there. Our world traveler, Sharon Hampson, thought she was just going to Ireland, but she's stuck in Paris right now because of the volcanic ash. She can't fly out of Paris, so otherwise she would be here. So there are some people who are not here tonight that really would like to be here that simply are not able to. So I didn't want people to think that they just are blowing us off. Okay, I think I saw Marilyn Pedretti's hand.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Under the purview of being on the Planning, Resources, and Development Committee, we oversee, or whatever you want to call it, the UW Extension System. So on Friday, I had the privilege of going up to Eau Claire with Mary Meehan Stroop to attend the 5th District meeting, and it was very informational. I was actually on a panel in the morning. The afternoon session, we learned about what other district or what other UW Extensions are doing in the district, and of course, the big issue is where's the money coming from? But it gave me a better understanding of the UW Extension. As part of that, I'm also, just an FYI, heading out to Washington, D.C. for a 3-day conference next week with the UW Extension. It is not at county board expense. So, thank you.
Thank you. Anybody else? Don Dina.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A week ago Friday, I attended a County Association Ag Committee meeting at Stevens Point. There were about 14 farmers on the committee from around the state of Wisconsin. We had a couple of issues that I thought it would be interesting talking about. Russ Rasmussen was there from DNR. And they're putting the new rules of 151 together right now. And there's going to be making some changes as far as conservation is concerned and runoff rules. And they were and he was there to talk to this committee about what they're doing. They're in the process of changing the nitrate runoff rules to a phosphate runoff rule. And there's a lot of negative rules on that based on the fact that on the eastern side of the state of Wisconsin, there's a lot of phosphate in the ground. And some of the lakes over there are being polluted, even though the farmers are not putting off a lot of fertilizer on. They also talked about the buffers adjacent to creeks. They started out with their rule on 20 to 30 foot of buffer along a creek, and they are now down to something less than that. And in some cases, it would almost eliminate some of the fields, small fields the farmers have along narrow creeks. We had the executive secretary for HSUS, which is the Humane Society of the United States. And she was there. She is now a 23-year-old gal from Madison, and they have an office in Madison. And there were quite a number of questions asked. She gave about a 20-minute presentation about what they expect to do in Wisconsin. They're probably going to be raising cane about farmers who are docking tails off of cows. They don't like seeing penned animals to any great degree, and they're not happy about dehorning and castration of animals either. Since I'm on the FLAIR board at West Salem, I wanted to know whether or not they're going to be complaining about whether or not we have all these penned animals at the fair. And I guess that is not a problem. And thank goodness for that, because I told her, if you come and raise cane with and open pens up for us, you're going to have to collect and catch those animals you leave go. She said that if any of the rules are going to be changed as far as farmers are concerned, she will probably come back to our committee and run it past the committee prior to them putting a bill before the state legislature. So I thought it was kind of interesting. I know there aren't too many farmers on this county board anymore. And but for those that are on the board, well, that's what's happening.
Ray Ebert.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, this is on behalf of the distinguished supervisor from District 21 who had to leave. I think you're familiar about a misnomer in the presentation of the Public Works Infrastructure and Aging Long-Term Care Committee under presentation of senior housing proposal for Lakeview Campus. Do you want me to just read that into the record?
That's fine.
Yeah. In the above minutes included in the packet for the county board meeting is a statement, quote, "The proposal has not yet been presented to the Village of West Salem Planning Commission, but there were plans to do so on May..."
Ray, that's not quite getting into the microphone.
May 2010. Then for Mr. Manthai, please note that this is a false statement. Specifically, back in October 2009, Mr. Steno met with and presented his proposal to the West Salem Planning Commission. Charlie Handy was sent a copy of these meeting minutes as well as the Village Board meeting minutes on that subject. The Planning Commission expressed interest in the concept at that time. There is no schedule to meet with Mr. Steno in May of 2010 since this was already done last October. Till such time as there is an identified piece of land on which Mr. Steno could build his project and has plans to accompany his request, there will be no further meeting scheduled with the West Salem Planning Commission. Thank you very much, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Ebert. Any other supervisor conference reports? Okay, then cards and correspondence will be up on the board. Committee meetings during recess, none. That gets us to appointments.
The privilege of the chair, I want to thank my colleagues for re-electing me to first vice chair and call on Chairman Doyle for appointments.
Thank you. I have a number of appointments that are listed on the agenda. I'm not going to read through all of them. I do have one correction, and Bill Feehan, this affects you. It says that the term would expire April 30th, 2013, but actually that term expires April 30th, 2012, because it's to fill an existing term. So with that correction on there, I would ask for approval of the various appointments that are listed.
Is that his appointment to Health and Human Services or
no,
his
that's
appointment
the one
to
Criminal Justice Management Council?
So the ninth one down?
414.
Thank you. Seconded by Supervisor Schrader. Any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Appointments are carried unanimously.
Thank you. Is there a motion on the consent agenda? Moved by Roger Plesha to approve, seconded by Jerry Sobranek. Any discussion or corrections on the consent agenda? Seeing none, all in favor say aye. Opposed, no. Carried unanimously. That gets us to Planning, Resource, and Development. Marilyn Pedretti.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Item 4-22, conditional use permit number 807, filed by Richard M. and Mary S. Schmidt to operate a wood and dye manufacturing business from their home on land zoned exclusive agriculture district in the town of Greenfield. I move the committee's report for approval with the eight conditions.
Marilyn Pedretti moves the committee report, which is to approve subject to eight conditions, seconded by Mr. Bina. Any discussion or questions on this one? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Carried unanimously.
Item 4-23, conditional use permit number 808, filed by Verizon Wireless, care of FMHC Corporation. Attention, Peter Shaw. To operate its existing 190-foot guide communication tower and facility as it currently existed on terminated conditional use permit number 45 on land zone transitional ag district in the town of Hamilton. I move the committee's report with the four conditions.
Ms. Pedretti moves the committee report, which is to approve subject to four conditions. I see the second done by Bob Kyle. Any questions on that or discussion? All in favor say aye. Oh, Mr. Schrader.
Thank you. On these conditional use permits for these towers, is there something in there as to what happens to those towers when their useful life is over? Whose responsibility of taking the
things let's down? Get Jeff Blesky in here to answer that question. For new people, Jeff Blesky is our zoning administrator.
I did hear the question. Our telecommunications ordinance went into effect 6 years ago. This tower actually existed prior to that. If we look at the minutes, we terminated the conditional use permit on this in March of 2009 because they were going to move this particular tower a little bit to the west. And then Verizon bought out the tower site and they didn't need the new site, so they decided to move back on here. So this is an existing tower. But to answer your question, we do put a bond, usually as a condition, that if they end up vacating the site, we cash their bond and tear the site down.
Any other questions for Jeff?
Okay.
Tara Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So even though ownership changes, it's still considered an existing tower?
Yes, it existed prior to our ordinance. Mm-hmm.
Other questions or discussion? Anything not for Jeff? Any questions or discussion? All in favor of the zoning petition moved to approve by Ms. Pedretti with those conditions, say aye. Opposed, no. Carried unanimously.
Item number 4-24, zoning petition number 1834, filed by Heath G. and Nicole S. Popowich, acting in behalf of Robert E. Smith, to rezone from Residential District A to Commercial District B in the town of Onalaska. I move the committee's report. There are no conditions.
Approval with several conditions?
I don't believe there are any on that one.
Okay, so just straight approval.
Straight approval.
Ms. Pedretti moves the committee report, which is to approve, seconded by Andrea Richmond. Discussion? All in favor say aye. Opposed, no. Carried unanimously.
I ask for unanimous consent to lump items 4-25 through 4-29 together.
Ms. Pedretti asked for unanimous consent to deal with all those terminations, which are ones that were uncontested. Is there any objection to handling all of those at the same time? Seeing none, go ahead and make the motion.
All right. I move for the approval of items 4-25 through 4-29, which are termination of permits.
So the motion is to approve the termination, seconded by Bill Brockmiller. Discussion or questions? All in favor say aye. Opposed, no. Carried unanimously.
Item 4-30 is the second reading of the Farmland Preservation Act. I move for its approval and ask for it to retain the floor.
Moved by Ms. Pedretti, seconded by Tara Johnson. Go ahead, Ms. Pedretti.
I offer an amendment, and you'll see it in your packet. It is amendment to Section 32.06, and it's on behalf of former board member Joe Veenstra in order to clean up some language for the appeal process.
Seconded by Tara Johnson. Discussion on that amendment, first of all. Seeing none, all in favor say aye. Opposed, no. Carried unanimously, not necessarily vociferously, but it did carry unanimously. That gets to the ordinance as amended. Mr. Bina.
I brought up a recommendation at last meeting, but I didn't have anything specific. I did talk to you, Steve, a little bit about it. I would like to offer an amendment to the first paragraph of membership. Right at the end, it goes through and says who would be on the committee of nine people. I don't have any problem with that at all. I guess this is a rural endeavor that we're doing, and since there are farmers all being involved in the program, and it's strictly farmers in most cases, I would like to amend and just add a few words to the end of the sentence with local conservation interest. Right after that, I would like to add at least three farmers to be on the committee from La Crosse County. That is...
I'm not finding that. I don't know if other people are, but... Okay.
It's Ordinance 80... And it's Section 165, Farmland Preservation Committee. And under number one paragraph is membership.
Is that?
And it's the membership that.
Is that into this month's packet?
Designates that.
Okay, this was not in this month's packet. You would have gotten it in last month's packet.
It's
do you have that? I don't think you have that section, though.
No, it's the wording from last month that we were given.
Okay, now let me ask a question. Are you changing something that is covered by the proposal before us, or are you changing another part of the ordinance? Part of the ordinance? Okay, then I don't think that we can deal with that tonight, Don. I think you need to bring that in as a separate thing, because I think that's outside the scope. And so I don't think we can deal... You certainly could bring it in as your own amendment, as a separate piece of legislation, but because it doesn't fit onto any of the things that are part of the subject that we're voting on tonight, that would not be germane.
But the ordinance is in this form in this form, if you like.
But it's not the whole ordinance that we're voting on tonight. The ordinance is already in place. We're changing this part of the ordinance.
We haven't approved the ordinance yet.
This is the second.
We haven't approved the ordinance at all.
I thought this was already in place.
This is the second reading of the ordinance tonight. And I just questioned something. This is the ordinance.
Oh, okay. I get it. Okay. So all that's in our packet was Mr. Veenstra's amendment.
That's right.
Got it. Okay.
That was all that was submitted.
Just ignore what I said, like everybody else does.
Well, that's all right. You're new in the job.
Well, I'm learning. I'm learning. All right.
Well, what I would like
to
do is to add about 7 or 8 words. Right after the first paragraph of the membership, if you see that.
Okay, I see it.
When you get the last 3 words of that paragraph, with local conservation interest.
Where it says right now, it says one representative.
I would remove that, put a comma there, and put in there at least 3 to be farmers in La Crosse County. That is all I'm asking for, because this is a rural ordinance.
Okay.
And you are going to be appointing, and you're going to be, there's nothing saying that you can have any farmers on there at all.
Okay, if I understand it correctly, and you're going to need to write this and give it to Linda.
I got it ready.
You're replacing the phrase, and one representative with local conservation interests, with,
no, I can.
Are you leaving those?
You can leave those there.
So you're
adding after the period.
Okay.
At least 3 to be farmers in La Crosse County.
Okay, so you're not subtracting anything. You're just adding 3 to be La Crosse County farmers.
That's right. Yeah.
Okay. Is there a second to that? Seconded by Jerry Sobranek.
Just a point of order. If board members didn't have it in their packet, it is in the agenda for last month, the addendum.
You
can pull it up on the screen.
Okay. Good point. That's why we have that computer program. Tara Johnson.
I have a question for Supervisor Bina. Are you suggesting that the size of the committee grow also?
No,
or
I'm not.
That 3 of the 6 citizen members must be farmers?
I'm not suggesting any change to the size of the board. 9 people is enough. But the chairman, when he appoints, he could either appoint a person from the county board who's a farmer, or 2, or the county, or the town board's, or any other of those areas. A conservation representative could be a farmer. So all I'm asking for is that there ought to be 3 people making the decision on farm issues from the farming sector out of the 9 people on that committee. That's
and
all I'm asking.
Do you have a definition of farmer? This is someone who makes their living in the agricultural business. It's not what some people might call a hobby farmer.
Somebody raises alpacas. Would they count? Just for an example.
If they know something about conservation. Don't get yourself into trouble, Steve.
I do it regularly.
A farmer, if you have interest in farmland, anything over 35 acres, you could be qualified for a farmer even if you rent it out. If you are classified as a farmer according to zoning, and it may not be a full-time farmer, too. So it would take 3 people with farming interest.
Just tell you what he intended is really irrelevant. If it says farmer, it doesn't say anything more specific than that. What a person intends when they introduce an amendment or a motion or resolution is fine, but that's not how the law interprets it. So he used the term farmer. So the county board chair making the appointments as they would come up would be as they interpret that, unless the board says, hey, this person's not a farmer. So, if somebody wants it to be more particular, that needs to be written and be voted on. But right now it just says in a very broad sense, farmer. However, that would be interpreted.
I'm not unsupportive of the double negative of the intent of the amendment. I have to say it's a little frustrating because Supervisor Bina, don't you sit on this committee? And did you offer this amendment in committee when you guys looked at the ordinance before it came to the board?
Yeah.
I'm just trying to get a sense of why this is coming tonight. We had other amendments that came in the packet.
It came to the committee, and that was the first we have seen of it.
After that was presented to the committee, I met with at least 10 to 20 farmers to get their ideas about what would be a good idea, and I do have a slip here if you would like to see it from one that wrote out all the things, some things we could do something with, and then some, most of them we couldn't. But the between 10 and 20 of them are suggesting that if we're going to have a farm program taking land and paying farmers for retaining exclusive ag land, then the farmer, there should be a few farmers on that committee to help determine whether or not these guys are legitimate or not. And that's the reason why I'm suggesting this, because these 10 to 20 farmers, which I do communicate with my electorate, they're suggesting they would like to see at minimum of 3 farmers on there. And that wouldn't be impossible with Steve appointing the committee.
And the county board approving it. And I get that. It's just, it would have been great to have this through the committee process instead of having to deal with it on the fly tonight.
I brought it up at the last meeting last month, and I didn't have anything written, but I did talk about it. And you were chair of the meeting because Steve was not here. And I did talk to Steve at the next meeting about it. And so that's what I'm presenting here.
Mr. Bean, I'm looking at and adding up these numbers, and I see that there are, aside from the 3 county board supervisors, there are 6 that are designated: town government, city, village, real estate, ag interest, which actually could be farmer, forestry, and then local conservation interest, which would leave, if the town association said, well, here's our person, and that person doesn't happen to be a farmer, and then the city village person doesn't happen to be a farmer, and the real estate person doesn't happen to be, and then the forestry person doesn't happen to be, we're starting to get down to the point where I'm wondering if it's going to be difficult to fill out this committee. And I'm all, that, I guess that's question number one for you. Question number two is, when we say one representative with agricultural interest, could that not be interpreted to be a farmer? And sure, might that be a way to handle this? Instead of saying 3 farmers, we simply change, instead of one representative with agricultural interest, maybe say 3 representatives with agricultural interest, or 3 farmers / agricultural interest, or something like that.
I don't
that.
Have any problem with that either. If you want to revise it from
what I'm just trying to figure out a way to make sure that we don't lock ourselves in a corner somehow on this whole thing. So Bev Mock has something to add, it sounds like.
I took the red off. I do feel that the last 3 designated ones deal with farmland preservation: the agricultural interest person, the forestry person, and the local conservation interest person. The farmland preservation ordinance deals with forest lands besides just plowing or whatever. I mean, I think that is kind of giving kind of agricultural interests or preservation of lands to keep them from perhaps being developed. I think this is a broader than just a typical dairy farmer only or a farmer who plants corn or whatever. And I think those 3 sort of represent this preservation area.
We could have tree farmers on the committee, and I don't
Mr.
have any
Mina,
problem with that at all.
Time out. I'm a little concerned about writing legislation on the fly, and I'm wondering what people think about the idea of maybe sending this back to PR&D and just have them wordsmith this and get it right so that we're not trying to figure it out on the board floor here. Tina Weirs?
Maybe we want to ask Charlie on that, because I think that these dollars are ready to be received from the state, and if we do it or postpone this for another month, I think we're going to be at risk of losing some of the dollars.
Jeff, do you know the? Oh, Charlie is here. Charlie, is that a concern?
Well, it is a concern, but I mean, if you want to. Sorry. It is definitely a concern. I mean, from a timing standpoint, it would be good to get this done, to get dollars infused into the program this year. Okay? If we go back to rewriting the legislation and come back, we probably won't get grant dollars until next year. But Okay. If that's your policy direction, that's the direction you want to go, that's fine.
No,
I don't see a concern with what he's proposing. I don't see a problem with getting three farmers of those nine. I don't see a problem with it at all.
By adding three farmers after we've got those other ones designated?
Right. What he's proposing, I don't see a concern with. I think we can find qualified members that would function.
And they could be a forestry farmer. They don't have to be milking cows or tilling the soil or planting corn or soybeans.
We have a bunch of hands up, one of which was not yours, Mr. Bina, so
okay,
wait a
minute. Thank you very much.
Marilyn Pedretti.
If I could offer a friendly amendment onto that saying, something like, if at all possible. Because like Mr. Doyle was saying, what if all these other people are appointed and you're down to three county board supervisors, and there aren't three county board supervisors who are farmers. So it may not be possible. So is that a...
Can you live with that, Mr. Bina, where it says three of whom are farmers, if possible?
I can.
Okay. We'll add that in by unanimous consent.
If possible. Okay.
If possible. Any other discussion? Leon Paff.
Before we discuss this, I'd like to second his motion. So we can put it on the floor.
Yeah, it was seconded. Yeah, Jerry Sobranek seconded it.
Sobranek did.
Did we act on Maryland's... amendment.
Mr. Bina agreed to it, and we did that by unanimous consent.
Yeah, that's okay.
Joe Veenstra's original amendment we voted on, that's done. So now we're on Mr. Bina's, and that has been seconded, and it's been tweaked. Vicki Burke has a concerned look on her face, and I thought she had her hand up.
I don't understand what you just did by unanimous consent, because I don't want to give unanimous consent to that, whatever.
If possible is all we put into my motion here.
At the end of his motion.
If it isn't possible to appoint three farmers, then we're not going to, or Steve won't appoint three farmers. But if he can possibly appoint three, that's fine. But if he can only come up with two, that's fine too then.
I have the floor, Mr. Chairman.
Certainly.
It seems to me in reading the ordinance that it says one representative from agricultural interests, one representative from forestry, one representative of local conservation interests, and I think that it covers all of the areas. I have a problem with selecting a particular profession or whatever it might be and giving that much weight on the numbers of committee members. So.
Okay, the unanimous consent portion was just to tweak his amendment. We still have to vote on his amendment. So I just want to clarify that. His amendment now has the words, if possible, at the end. We still have to vote on that. Jeff Schrader.
It was just a question for Charlie. Are these grant dollars guaranteed now?
The grant dollars are in the biennial budget for the state of Wisconsin, yes.
Thank you.
Any further discussion on Mr. Bina's amendment? On Mr. Bina's amendment, any discussion? Okay, let's try our new voting system. So if you are in favor of Mr. Bina's amendment, vote yes. If you are opposed, vote no. Mr. Bina's amendment says, adds three farmers if possible.
Wrong pop-up. Oh, wait a minute.
If you click on it and it still shows it didn't take it, so you need to double-click it.
Yep.
Scroll down. Scroll down.
Yes.
Pull it down.
You might need to scroll down if it's not showing.
Ray, yes doesn't work on this computer.
Wait. We don't want to go there.
Just Mr. Point of information, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Burns.
Just I'm reading the voting program here. There's a part that's not in quotes, and there's a part that is in quotes. I'm assuming that the part that is in quotes is the part that we're voting on that would be inserted. The other part is more just for information. Is that correct? It says
I did
add,
the best I could,
add.
Jim, with all the conversation that was going on while I typed this. The if at all possible in quotation marks is the friendly amendment that Marilyn Pedretti offered.
So it's at least three of the nine members to be farmers in La Crosse County, if at all possible. That's the way I understand it.
That is what you are voting on. Vicki Burke, have a point of information?
I have a point of parliamentary procedure that you might check. It was my understanding that when something is on the floor, then it belongs to the entire body, and you
Correct.
Can't unanimously add a friendly amendment.
You can do anything by unanimous consent.
Oh.
Right? Bill says yes. Thanks, Bill. I think we have anarchy about to descend here. Where are we on this one? Who hasn't voted yet? Jim Burns, did you vote?
No, I didn't. It shouldn't say at least three of nine members. That's not what we're voting on. We're voting on if at all possible.
Wrong. We're voting on that whole phrase you just read. Three farmers, if at all possible. That's what we're voting on. Okay. Has everybody voted? All right. All right, the amendment passes on a vote of 22-8. That gets us to the proposed ordinance as amended. Any further discussion, amendments, questions? All in favor of the ordinance as amended, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. One no, two noes. Mr. Spiker, Ms. Burke. That passes. All right. Marilyn Pedretti, is that it for you?
I am finished. Thank you.
Thank you. The noes were Spiker and Burke. Okay. That gets us to Executive Committee. Tara Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have Resolution 4-32 to the Honorable Members of the La Crosse County Board of Supervisors acknowledging the best of public service. Whereas the following employees have been a faithful part in providing the best of public service to La Crosse County, including Michael A. Weibel in Zoning, Planning, and Land Information Department, 33-plus years. Just as a note, I think yesterday was his last day. Is that right? Yesterday. Lynette Dettinger at Hillview Healthcare Center, 21-plus years. And Leonilda Thompson in the Human Services Economic Support Division, also 20-plus years. And whereas it is the wish of the County Board of Supervisors to acknowledge long and faithful service on behalf of the citizens of La Crosse County, now therefore be it resolved that a resolution extending our congratulations be recorded in the La Crosse County Board proceedings and a certificate of our actions be presented as an expression of our gratitude. I move its approval.
Moved by Tara Johnson, second by Bill Brockmiller. Ms. Johnson, you have no idea what you just did to our county clerk by taking this out of order.
I'm so sorry. Oh, sorry, Linda.
That's okay. We'll do this one in a voice vote. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Carried unanimously.
Now to item 4-31. Which is the second reading of an ordinance to amend section 3.13, parent 4, parent B, 4 of Chapter 3 of the General Code of La Crosse County regarding mileage reimbursement. As this is its second reading, I move its approval.
Moved by Tara Johnson. Is there a second? No second? Second by Roger Plesha. Ms. Johnson.
I'm done. I'm just moving it.
Oh, okay. This is actually Sharon Hampson's. Maybe we should hold it over for 30 days. Moved by Jill Billings to hold over for 30 days. Is there a second? Who was that? Second by Audrey Cotter. All in favor of holding over for 30 days, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Carried. One no, Jeff Schrader. That carries.
Launching forward to...
Wait a minute. Stop the earth for a minute. We got to catch up. The no was Jeff Schrader. All right. We're giving our new system a tryout here tonight. Go ahead, Tara Johnson.
Okay, leapfrogging over to item 4-33 to the Honorable Members of the La Crosse County Board of Supervisors. Have I got this one in the right order, Linda?
You do.
Okay. Regarding elected official salaries for next term, whereas the county board has reviewed and considered modifications of the elected official's salaries pursuant to Wisconsin State Statutes 59.22, parent 1, parent A, now therefore be it resolved that the following elected officers shall be paid at the annual rate set forth on the following schedule for the 2011-2014 term commencing January 3, 2011, and for the second, third, and fourth year in the term shall be effective January 1, 2012, January 1, 2013, and January 1, 2014. The elected officers are sheriff and clerk of courts. Fiscal note is the salary, fringe benefits, and roll-ups for this group in 2011 will be approximately $7,256. Thereafter, the amounts are listed in the table on the resolution. Okay. I move its approval.
Moved by Tara Johnson. Is there a second? Second by Bill Brockmiller.
And if I could keep the floor, just a note to everyone. The reason we have to do this now is those offices are now four-year terms, and those salaries have to be set before nomination papers get taken out in June.
June 1st. Discussion on this one or questions? Jeff Schrader.
It says here all are 3% except for the clerk of courts, and they are, and she or he or is 5%. The reason being?
Mr. O'Malley, why don't you respond to that one?
If the county board refers to the last terms that were set for county clerk, treasurer, and register of deeds, you gave an additional 2% to all three of those, and of course the clerk of courts wasn't up at that time. So you ended up minimizing the difference between those positions, and the clerk of courts appealed to the executive committee asking to have that match in the first year. The clerk of courts supervises a larger budget and more employees. The county board adopted a 5% increase in the first year of the four-year term for county clerk, county treasurer, and register of deeds. This would reinstate the differential between the clerk of courts and the other three positions.
Mr. Ebert.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, I spoke to the clerk, the treasurer, and register of deeds, and all thought it was appropriate for the clerk of court to make more money because of the staff thing. So I just wanted to check to make sure we weren't going to get them against us. And again, the two-a-person, person, and the clerk is certainly here, can confirm, but I spoke to all three, and they were behind this this pay raise for the, okay, for the clerk of courts.
Any other discussion or questions? Mr. Mina.
Everything was going way too smooth until now.
You weren't at the same meeting I've been at.
I guess I'm kind of amazed. You know, we're allowing 3-5% increases in salaries at a time when we're in the middle of a depression and a recession for sure, and people are losing their jobs every day, and we got unemployment coming out of our ears in the United States. The unemployment rate went down just a little bit because the government hired a bunch of census takers for the census. There are salaries froze all over the place. Franciscan froze all of their salaries for 1 year. Heilman's froze them for a year. They cut insurance rates. Every family at Heilman's has to make up $400 a year on health insurance. Human Services rolls for the needy, the hungry, the mental health are bigger, our jails are full, Salvation Army is full, more church groups are feeding people every day, and people around the country are just happy with their jobs. So, unfortunately, I cannot vote for a 3-5% raise for anybody in this economic status. So,
further discussion? No further discussion. Can we vote on the computer on this one? All right. If you are in favor of the resolution, vote aye. If you are opposed, vote no. Dean Friedland, do we have your vote? Now we do. Margaret Wood? Margaret Wood? That resolution passes on a vote of 21 to 9.
Item 4-34 to the honorable members of the La Crosse County Board of Supervisors regarding economic support shared services. Whereas American Reinvestment and Recovery Act, known as ERA, funding from the federal government was used in part by the state of Wisconsin to reduce further cuts to counties in administering income maintenance programs in 2010 calendar year, and whereas those funds are due to sunset at the end of June 2011, causing counties further concerns for future state cuts in economic support and income maintenance. And whereas the State Department of Health Services, which administers most of the income maintenance programs, has contacted several regions of the state, including La Crosse and the Western Region, for new models to administer these programs that are both cost-efficient and consistent in administration across counties. And whereas a recommendation coming from the eight counties of Buffalo, Clark, Jackson, La Crosse, Monroe, Pepin, Trempealeau, and Vernon in western Wisconsin on shared services to use La Crosse County's change or call center for most aspects of changes in people's economic support cases. And whereas La Crosse County's economic support section is one of only a few counties which began a change call center beginning in 2003 and has been used as a model throughout the state. And whereas the Secretary of DHS approved the region's proposal of $348,580.66 to develop an economic support regional change call center, which includes the hiring of 4 limited-term economic support specialists, 1 limited-term economic support clerk, remodeling costs for staff space, information technology hardware and software, and incidentals. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the La Crosse County Board of Supervisors authorizes its Human Services Department to accept an amendment to the state-county income maintenance contract to create a regional call center. Be it further resolved that the La Crosse County Board of Supervisors authorizes its Human Services Department to hire up to 5 limited-term employees to sunset June 30th, 2011, when the state funds end, and to purchase necessary information technology infrastructure and necessary remodeling for staff space to carry out this initiative. Be it further resolved that no county cost is involved with this initiative, and if state sustainable funding is not granted through June 30th, 2011, the initiative will be terminated. The fiscal note is funding is $348,580.66. It comes from the State Department of Health Services for the duration of this pilot model for the future economic support. No county match funding is required, and state funding would come from an amendment to the Department of Health Services contract for 2010. I move its approval.
Moved by Terry Johnson. Is there a second? Seconded by Jill Billings. Questions or comments? Mr. Feehan.
My question is, the funding for this only runs through June of 2011, and once we've created these 5 positions, won't there be a predisposition to maintaining those positions and increasing the size of county employment, or will there be other positions that are eliminated with the creation of this this service?
Who can answer that one? Mr. O'Malley?
I can start. We also have Lori Graff, and I can start, and we also have other supervisors that are here. Pardon?
It's on.
I think it's on. Supervisor Feehan, those positions will be eliminated by 2011 if we don't have continued funding. Many times what will happen with regionalization and different ideas like this, it can only be tied into the funding of the biennium. The state can't commit beyond that at this point. This is the first step in potential regionalization of economic support. And Dean Rupert and Larry Graff are here to answer more questions. But when the board adopts a resolution that sunsets positions, we have to do that. They have to sunset.
Other questions or discussion? Jeff Schrader.
What is the difference in definition between
termination and sunsetting? Or are there any?
I guess they're used synonymously. It's our intent by bringing this resolution that if the funding doesn't continue, those positions end on June 30th of 2011 unless the board has a separate vote to do something else. That is what's authorized in this resolution. Beyond that, we don't have any authority.
Joe Billings?
excuse me. This resolution was several months in the making, meeting with all of these counties and trying to come up with a model. Basically, this system is another system that's broken, and the state put out a call to all counties and said, you can come up with a model that works for your region, or we're going to come up with a model in the state. Now, we've seen that sometimes those models are good, sometimes those models are not so good when the state comes up with it. So our department and departments from the surrounding counties got together and talked about what would seem to work well in our area that will save money but still be an effective call change center. I just got to sit against the wall in these meetings, and our staff was incredible. We're so lucky to have staff with the expertise that our staff has, and they very nicely walked that thin line of shared services with these other counties of not making them feel like La Crosse County is taking over this area, but working in partnership. And the state liked our model, and so we get to try it out. And that's what this is. These are limited term employments. And if it works, we may get some more money from the state to continue. If the state likes this model, they might fund it for other areas. Once again, we're just proving to be sort of a testing ground for the state. And our employees are working hard to make this work.
Mr. Feehan.
So is this a new service that our county will be providing to our citizens, or is it replacing another service that's currently being provided?
Let's get Dean and Laurie up to answer that.
La Crosse County Economic Support started a change reporting center in 2003. So we've had the change reporting center for La Crosse County since then. And we are one of four areas in the state that has a change reporting center. So it's not a new service for La Crosse County. It's just providing it on a regional basis instead of just for La Crosse County.
Dean, anything to add to that?
Nope. That's
okay.
Good.
Any other questions? Mr. Ebert?
Does this result in, A, either a savings of levy dollars for La Crosse County, or, B, an increase in service to members of La Crosse County?
I would say it does not increase service to La Crosse County individuals where we have the change center for our constituents of La Crosse County. In terms of levy savings, what it's going to add, for example, is some remodeled space, about $35,000 worth of remodeled space that we wouldn't have otherwise. It's going to add some dollars to our infrastructure for a short period of time to IT and so on for the changes they're making. So it's bringing new dollars into the county. We'll replace levy dollars. I can't say that for sure, but it's going to sure bring new dollars into other pieces that we would not have had budgeted otherwise.
Brad Conkle.
I just wanted to add on to that. From what I have heard from our committee meetings is that this is kind of a state outlook, a statewide outlook in really taking these high costs and trying to bring them down by regionalizing. So in effect, if this program proves to be effective, we could be saving money in the long run if the state likes it and continues to do this. Would be my argument.
Okay. Audrey Catter.
Thank you. I'm just wondering if, or with the cooperation amongst counties, since we are a significant magnet for many of the human services, we tend to draw people from the surrounding area. Hopefully, it would seem to me that by providing the cooperative services, it will improve the quality of services in the surrounding area and therefore, hopefully, reduce the stress on us. Mm-hmm. It looks like I've...
Definitely. We think that it's going to increase customer service in these other areas.
Thank you.
Terry Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just two quick points. I think it's a, in my opinion, it's a misnomer to say that human services draws people to this area. I think the healthcare centers draw people. I think colleges and universities. I think employment opportunities. I'm not sure that it's accurate to say that the human services that we provide cause people to move here. But that said, I think the issue of whether or not, to Supervisor Ebert's question about whether levy dollars will be saved, that may be tough to prove. I think we could say as state taxpayers, this is saving the state money by regionalizing. So we may not feel the effect directly in the county's budget, but at the state level, regionalization is being done to save money in their budget.
Any other questions or discussion? Seeing none, all in favor of the resolution say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Carried unanimously. Thank you, Dean and Lori.
Item 4-35 to the Honorable Members of the La Crosse County Board of Supervisors regarding acceptance of American Recovery and Reinvestment Act funds for obesity prevention. Whereas La Crosse County has been awarded a grant under the ERA Act of 2009 in the amount of $2,233,863 to consolidate and expand obesity prevention activities in the county to create healthier communities through proven population-based approaches to obesity prevention. And whereas the grant is for the period March 19, 2010 through March 18, 2012 and will require the addition of 4.0 FTE nutrition staff, including 2.0 Nutrition Educator 1 and 2.0 Health Educator 1, and will cover the costs of existing staff performing duties that are required by the grant, including a 0.85 Nutrition Manager, a 0.4 Nutrition Educator 2, and 0.2 Epidemiologist. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the La Crosse County Board does hereby accept the ERA grant for obesity prevention in La Crosse County in the amount of $2,233,863 for the period of March 19, 2010 through March 18, 2012. Be it further resolved that the Health Department is authorized to hire 2.0 Nutrition Educator 1 employees and 2.0 Health Educator 1 employees to perform the duties required under this grant, and that such new positions shall sunset at the end of the grant funding, and that the nutrition supervisor position and the other positions as specified in Attachment A under the nutrition internal account shall be filled by existing staff, and the finance director is authorized to make the appropriate budget changes. The fiscal note is the 2010 costs for the staff and related expenses to be reimbursed by the ERA grant are detailed in Attachment A. I move its approval.
Moved by Chair Johnson, second by Brad Conkle. Discussion or questions? Andrea Richmond.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I don't know how many of you have taken a look at the Attachment A, but I have some issues here with a marketing firm of $100,000, $100,425. We have appropriated $22,500 for the Safe Routes to School Coordinator program. I think we need to readjust this Attachment A and not spend the $100,000 on a marketing firm. And the reason for that is the grant says it's for physical activity to prevent obesity. We're going to have $22,000 for Safe Routes to School Coordinators, but we have no money in here for Safe Route funds, and I would like to request some funds in there for Safe Routes, which includes sidewalks. In my district alone, I have at least four different areas that are in need of sidewalks. I was at the Public Works meeting last Monday, and Councilmember Swantz also requested some money to be used for Safe Routes and additional sidewalks where there are no sidewalks. We're talking about, for example, Roosevelt Cooley Montessori School. Most of the kids now are either biking or riding over to Franklin School because of the budget changes. I would like to amend that Attachment A and reduce that marketing dollars of $100,000 and cut that in half to $50,000 if it is actually needed. I will amend that to $50,000 and then add the other $50,000 for sidewalks, Safe Routes to School sidewalks, where there are no existing sidewalks for the public use.
Before we ask for a second on that, I need to call on Mr. Shepherd.
I'm not sure that you can do that. And Linda Lee is here, and she was the one that wrote the grant. But these things are specified in the grant application. This is what was approved by the state, as I understand it. So if you change these things and designate something else, we may lose the entire grant. But Linda would be better.
Linda, can you comment on that?
The federal government has required certain things be in the grant, and one of them is media. I just came back from a meeting in Atlanta. They are very definite on this. You have to have that piece in your plan of work for the 2 years. The other piece that they have made very clear is that we cannot use this for physical infrastructure like sidewalks. Now, that said, our office is getting ready to write our next Safe Routes to School grant for the DOT, and that does pay for infrastructure. So, you know, if you would let me know where you want this to happen, we can include it in that second grant, but it can't be part of this one because it's not allowed by the regulations that govern this.
But the $100,000 is just for this year, 2010.
Right.
So
yeah.
We're going to give another $100,000 for another year?
Yeah. There will be almost a little over $200,000 for media. Now, that is a variety of things. It can be print media. It can be TV, or it could be radio. It can be a lot of different things, and it's going to be a mixture of stuff. It's not just TV, because you're right. I mean, the whole idea behind this is to get people moving.
Right.
So,
I guess I'm a little surprised if we're going to have the Safe Routes to School coordinators. Why in the grant application we couldn't have included some of that dollars for the sidewalks?
Because they won't allow it. I actually did look into it because the current Safe Routes to School coordinator and I had talked about things that we'd like to see happen in the city.
Mm-hmm.
And I asked the granting agency, the Centers for Disease Control, if we could do some of these things, and they were very specific about infrastructure, and no, we could not pay for that.
Okay. Well, thank you for that information, and I will get a list for you for that grant.
That would be great.
Yeah. What is the deadline for that?
It's sometime this fall, probably early October, end of September. So, but we're going to be putting the grant application together probably starting in August. So if you could get it to me in July, that would be great.
I'll get it to you this week, yeah. Thank you.
Joe Belskemper?
Thank you. Did the federal government specify a percentage of this to be spent on advertising? They specified 11 to 12%?
Not specifically. Actually, this is low compared to what many of the grantees ended up including in their budgets. They wanted sizable amounts of money to be spent on this. And it's going to be hooked to a national campaign that will also do some media surrounding the issue of obesity and healthy eating and physical activity. So
it may be low by federal standards, but this is very high to spend 12% of a budget on advertising.
Yeah.
You could spend a lot. I mean, I'm not saying your hands are tied here, but this is way, way out of line with what
it's,
you could spend a lot at $20,000, you could get a huge bang.
Yeah.
That's all.
They are looking at 24 months and actually having media over that 24-month period, and that can get expensive if that's what you want to do. And they are suggesting a certain amount of media. And so it is a little bit low by their standards.
Mr. Ebert.
Thank you. Just looking over the thing, the 12 public school coordinators, 15 work sites, are these already selected, or what will be the criteria? In other words, how many, for instance, in the city, how many out city? Well, I mean, how will that be decided, and who will make those decisions?
The schools? Are you talking about? Or the work sites?
All of the above. I'm just wondering how that selection will be made and who will be making it.
The schools, we are looking at walkable schools. And so not all schools are walkable. Some of them are consolidated schools, and so most of the kids are bused. Some of the schools have hazardous busing. And so those schools probably will not be in the mix. We will be looking at schools that are truly walkable. As far as the work sites go, we will be developing criteria. And if you have ideas of what you would like to see included, I'd be more than happy to talk with you about it. One of the people we are going to be hiring is going to be the point person on this. So we have not at this point in time actually put together the package that we would send out to work sites. So
we don't know what the criteria is, and we don't know who the people making the selection will be.
Well, the selection committee will be the folks that the team that we are hiring and myself. We are also working with Pioneering Healthier Communities, the Y-based program, that has a worksite award. And so the preliminary discussions have been that we would use those criteria as a way to kind of choose work sites that would be interested in implementing some of these kinds of activities for their employees. We are specifically, with this money, looking at active commuting and trying to encourage people to leave their cars elsewhere, to not have as many people driving into the city as we currently have. As it's written in the grant, it's concentrated in the city, but we have had some preliminary discussions about taking some of those spots elsewhere in the county.
And we would certainly appreciate that as one of the people in the Elk County. Thank you.
Yeah.
Jeff Schrader.
Thank you. In looking at some of the people that you're going to be hiring here, mm-hmm. did you contact or were you in contact with anybody at the universities here? We have school for sure that's well-versed in physical activity and mm-hmm. what you're looking for there, graduate assistants or whatever, that you wouldn't have to hire full-time employees?
I think there's going to be enough work there for a full-time staff person. And so we're looking at full-time people, because if you're going to be working with 15 work sites along with helping improve the infrastructure of the county by changing policies or encouraging certain environmental changes in the county, like, for instance, sidewalks, then you're going to need somebody 37 and a half hours a week. I don't think you can get by with 20. And I also think that it needs to be someone who probably has graduated already from school and has hopefully had some experience working in the field.
I would assume some of these people are graduate assistants, aren't they? They've already graduated.
But if they're in graduate school, they're not going to have time.
It could be a full time.
I don't have a problem hiring somebody that should be looked at. Yeah, in graduate school. But I also don't want somebody to say to me, "Well, I have a class, I can't go to that meeting," or "I have a class, I can't meet with that work site." That person needs to be available 37 and a half hours a week.
And I'm from French Island. We don't have any sidewalks, so I want you to look at us, too.
Oh.
Bill Feehan.
Just a quick question. Thank you, Mr. Chair. $785,000 will be spent this year in this grant, and as I look at this, A little less than $32,000 will be spent with the YMCA and the Boys and Girls Club. Mm-hmm. Is there any possibility that we could help those organizations? It seems to me that creating programs for young people to stay active would be a very important part of this, and it just doesn't seem like we're spending very much of this money there.
I have had conversations with the Y and with the Boys and Girls Club, and those amounts were developed with them in tandem with us. So, and they're for very specific kinds of programming. The Y, for instance, is getting funding to support their school swim partnership so that low-income families whose kids may not know how to swim have the opportunity to go to the Y, get swimming lessons, and learn how to swim. They even supply trunks for kids or bathing suits for kids that don't have them. The Boys and Girls Club, it's focused on the teen program there to try and keep that open longer hours and to incorporate physical activity into it. So the budgets were developed with them, you know, and not, I didn't kind of pull a number out of the air.
Any other discussion or questions? Seeing none, all in favor of the resolution say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Carried unanimously.
Thank you.
Thanks, Linda. One more for you,
item
Ms. Johnson.
Item 4-36 to the honorable members of the La Crosse County Board of Supervisors regarding authorization to maintain DGS printing assistant position at full-time status through December 2010. Whereas during the 2010 budget process, a review of revenues and expenses within the document and graphic services area indicated that a reduction in FTEs may be necessary, including the potential reduction of one printing assistant position. And whereas a result of the study that was required to look at staff time, work tasks, and fee schedules to ensure the department was being fiscally responsible, indicated that the volume of DGS services warranted the printing assistant remain at full time through the end of 2010 at an estimated cost of $4,700. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the IT department be hereby authorized to maintain the printing assistant position within DGS at full-time status through the end of 2010. Be it further resolved that the finance department be hereby authorized to transfer the necessary funding from the IT department wage accounts to the DGS wage accounts. And the fiscal note is that funds are available in the IT department due to a position that has been unfilled since the beginning of the year. The transfer of $4,700 from IT to DGS is outlined in the table included in the resolution. I move its approval.
Moved by Tara Johnson. Is there a second? Seconded by Andrea Richmond. Discussion or questions? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Carried unanimously. That it for you, Ms. Johnson?
Yes,
thank you. Before we do Aging and Long-Term Care Committee, I'm going to jump in here. In our last meeting when we talked about this RCAC issue, it was understood that there was going to be a budget included in your packet. Mr. O'Malley and I have talked, and through an error it was discovered that was not included in your packet. It's going to be handed out now, but it would be my belief that it would be inappropriate without you having priorly received it, having gotten it already, that we should not be voting on it tonight. We've also talked with Mr. Eid about this, and he is comfortable with us holding this over to the May 10th policy planning meeting unless there is any objection to that. Does anybody have any objection to holding this over to policy planning? Maureen Friedland?
Well, I don't have an objection to holding it over. In fact, I'm really in favor of that because I'd like to see those projections. I'd like to find out what the costs are. But I just have a question about this as it is. Looking at the committee notes, it looks like it would take 80% private pay and only 20% family care to make this a go. Am I reading that correctly? And is that what we're looking at right now?
Mr. O'Malley.
Yeah. Pete Ide, as he's handing this out, could answer it in more detail. Recognize that the difference between private pay and CMO is not that significant. There's a slight difference of about 15%, and this spreadsheet that is represented can be changed to 70-30, 60-40. There are any number of ways to project that, but it seems that based on the standards that we would be charging, there is very limited amount of difference between the two types of rates, whereas in other entities, the difference might be more significant than that.
We do not presently have anything on the floor, but I want to give a little latitude here. As long as Pete is here, if people do have some questions, as long as people are comfortable holding this over to that policy planning meeting, that's great. But I do want people to have a chance to throw out any questions that they had tonight. Mr. Geary.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In that resolution, it said Whipley reviewed the numbers.
Correct.
What numbers did they review?
They reviewed this.
Our
numbers, what
our
you have.
Our arithmetic?
Yep. Right, our arithmetic and that. They're willing to provide a letter stating they reviewed the numbers based on our assumptions.
Okay, we made some assumptions. They just multiplied it out and seen if we computed it out correctly, or?
Yes, and also.
Or did they agree with the assumptions?
They agreed with the assumptions, and actually quoting them says that our assumptions were conservative in nature, like our 80-20 split, like our rates, like our wage and benefit package, that we are on the conservative end.
Okay. Maybe by the 10th meeting they could have a letter or something on our desk or in our next packet or something.
Yep, definitely.
Okay, that'd be good.
In the packet. Let's get it in the packet. Chair Johnson.
Did the committee have this document?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, committee had it. It was just through an oversight that it didn't get into the packet, so we wanted to make sure everybody had a chance to look at it before we take any votes. And it wasn't Linda's fault. Just wanted to emphasize that. Maureen, did you have another question?
Well, yeah, I really hadn't finished my question. So we've been talking all along about a moderate cost housing, that this was going to be a little bit less than the market price generally, that we were trying to help the county out and help our people out, and it was going to be a little bit less expensive than going into regular assisted living. I believe that's true, but I find that odd then, that if 80% of the people are going to be at private pay, that so many of the people living there are going to be getting housing at a assisted living at a cost that's less than what people are paying in the private market. I would have thought that we would have been trying to find a higher, some kind of combination, a size unit, whether it's less than 30 units or more than 30 units, where we could put more family care people and still break even.
Our private pay rate is lower generally than 80% of the other assisted living facilities. So the people who are paid privately will have a value going to our facility and paid less than most of the competitors out there. Secondly, there's just not that many MCO clients out there. There is no MCO, which is Western Wisconsin Cares Family Care facility, that has more than 20% of its clients enrolled in there. So each assisted living facility has that mix. We would be willing to take more. Many facilities do have a cap, or they don't take them at all. I just don't foresee the future where they would be 50-60% out there. There are just not that many people. You have to qualify, as you know, for the family care program, and people still have to qualify. So if they have the funds, they cannot qualify.
Any other issues? Mr. Burns.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I know the last time we talked about this, March 8th, 2010, we voted to approve the concept after the market analysis. This is a financial analysis then?
Yes.
This is all we have for financial analysis, just this?
This is what we projected financial analysis, correct.
Okay. And then I guess I want to ask this now, and because I'll bring it up again next time we debate it, but has there ever been a thought that perhaps instead of the county diving full into the assisted living business, we did a private-public partnership where we have space that we'd lease out to a private entity that would handle the operations part of this enterprise, and the county would, of course, deal with the facilities part of it. Has that ever been entertained? Has that thought ever been?
I can say honestly, it crossed my mind, and if this doesn't work, that would be something that we would maybe consider. Right now, we have nothing to really offer. We have land at Hillview, and we have the Hillview reputation in our continuum of care, which we want to meet. So that is our goal right now, is to complete our continuum of care. A public-private partnership for this could not be ruled out, but it's not on the forefront now. We would like to have our own facility, just like the privates and the other nursing homes out there. They would like to have their own facility. Obviously, it would take a pretty hefty legal contract to balance that out. Who owns what? Who does what? That type of thing.
Because I bring this up because we talked about risk last time and set market saturation and the it's an intensely competitive market. I think it was paraphrasing the report. I think that would be a more logical, reasonable step if we do want to engage in this kind of activity. I think that would be more of an incremental step I would suggest first, as opposed to just jumping right into this enterprise. Thank you.
Audrey Cotter.
Thank you. Going back to the question of why only 20% from the CMO, and one of the primary focuses of the CMO is to keep people in their own homes. And so they're putting anybody into a facility of any kind is pretty low on their list of priorities, which is one of the reasons that 20% is very likely a very adequate number to target.
But I wanted to give the board latitude to get these issues out. They're going to have to get answered at some point. So if people want to overrule me, you're welcome to do that, but that's how I feel at this point, is I want to give people a chance who came prepared to ask questions to get their questions out. Mr. Feehan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My question goes to the marketplace, and as a businessman, one of the things that we always do when we write a business plan is we take a look at the competitive situation in the marketplace, and I'm curious, have we got information as far as what the occupancy rates are in private facilities, and what is the opening of this public facility going to do to those private facilities and their businesses?
Well, we've had a whole debate and study on that. Whiffley was here. I can tell you that I'm in, if not daily, close to daily contact with other nursing homes and other providers. Other providers are basically full. They may have an opening, one or two openings right there, but there's turnover, that type of thing. I can tell you that the need is growing, that the need will be growing for the senior population to grow. The baby boomers are growing, the aging population, the 85-plus population is the fastest-growing population. And I can also tell you our current clients at Hillview and Carroll Heights are asking about an assisted living on our campus on a daily basis for us to complete the continuum of care, to stay with their friends, to stay with their spouses in many cases. At Carroll Heights and Hillview, our two facilities, we have a handful of spouses. One lives in the nursing home, one lives next door at Carroll Heights. They would like to continue that and not be separated.
Tina Weirs.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. But it seems to me that there was just a facility that closed recently.
Swift Haven.
Was that assisted living or a nursing home?
That was assisted living.
Assisted living. Mm-hmm. Has any consideration been given to what it would cost to remodel that facility or versus?
I think the reason, and this is my opinion, but I feel confident that one of the major reasons it closed, it was a poor facility in a poor location, but the remodeling of the hotel wasn't done to the assisted living standards, and it just wasn't a very good assisted living building. One of our major goals is to complete the continuum on our campus.
Okay, any other questions people have All right, we'll talk about this again next month. Hold on to the handout that you got tonight. I'm sure that Pete will be back to answer any questions you have about that. So, Roger Plesha, is that it for you? Thank you. All right, that gets us to Mr. Spiker and Public Works and Infrastructure.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Item 438, authorization to sell property 1242 11th Street South to the City of La Crosse. It passed the Public Works Committee on a 4-2 split vote. Whereas La Crosse County has acquired title to tax delinquent property located at 1242 11th Street South, La Crosse, Wisconsin, consisting of a house located on a small lot. Whereas the county is authorized to sell its tax-deeded lands in such a manner upon such terms as the county board may by resolution determine, and the county may transfer such land to any municipality within the county pursuant to Wisconsin Statute 7535 sub 2, 5952 sub C. Whereas the property shows a fair market value of $52,200 on a 2009 tax bill, but the actual fair market value is substantially less because the property has been abandoned and is in need of significant repairs and maintenance. Whereas the committee recommends the selling of the property to the City of La Crosse for $30,000, which would reimburse the county for the maintenance costs and for the outstanding taxes, interest, and penalty assessed against the property. Whereas such sale would be the best interest of the taxpayers of La Crosse County. Now, therefore, be resolved that La Crosse County Board authorizes the sale 1242 11th Street South, La Crosse, Wisconsin, to the City of La Crosse for the amount of $30,000. Be it further resolved that the county board chair, county clerk, are authorized to sign a quitclaim deed conveying the property known as 1242 11th Street South, La Crosse, Wisconsin, by its legal description and any other documents necessary to sell the property to the City of La Crosse upon approval by Corporation Council. The fiscal note, the total outstanding taxes for the years 2002 to 2009 are as follows. Taxes, $10,769.30. Interest, $4,501.90. Penalty, $2,251.45, for a total of $17,522.65 as of April 2010. The revenue from the tax delinquent property is first used to satisfy outstanding taxes. Any remaining revenues received is in current fiscal year in the Treasury's Department. I move for approval, Mr. Chairman.
Moved by Mr. Spiker, seconded by Arlene Benrood. Discussion or questions? Mr. Ebert.
Thank you. I just wonder, I see two people who are against it. I wonder if they'd be so kind as to tell why they voted against it. And the other, while we're on the thing, is who did the appraisal of $30,000?
Mr. Spropoulos, do you have the answer?
That was a staff recommendation by myself and Dave Lang.
Based on what?
Based on viewing the property and other properties that we've been in dealing with.
Okay, and like what happened to Lake Neshonoc, we don't need to get an independent assessment on these like we did for the Lake Neshonoc properties.
Because we're selling to another municipality, we do not have to get a full appraisal on it.
Thank you. And then were the two, they'd be so kind, I just wonder what the reason for voting against.
Mr. Burns?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was one of the two committee members that voted against this in committee. Basically, my no vote stemmed for two reasons. First, it was unclear what the property's worth, and we haven't really done any appraisals, so we're not sure. It could be worth more than $30,000, less than $30,000. We're not sure what it's worth. But I guess my second reason, most importantly, deals with just making sure that our citizens have a chance to purchase a property if they are interested in it, and giving them a chance to bid on it instead of just having the City of La Crosse have the exclusive right to purchase a property. I thought why not let the citizens have a chance, and if there's no interest from the citizens, maybe a neighbor, maybe a somebody in the neighborhood who wants to who sees that as an investment or who has a stake in the property who wants to see that betterment in their community. Let them have a chance to bid on it at least. Why lock out citizens? The city could certainly bid on it as well, but why not inform the citizens of this too? So I guess I want to make sure the little guy has a chance to have a chance to buy it.
Audrey Catter.
Thank you. It seems that so many of these things are overlapping areas that I spend a fair amount of time working on. And the reason the city buys these properties is in impoverished areas and is making an effort to, what the city will do is turn around and build a house that will have to have owner occupancy for a minimum of 5 years. And the rationale behind that is renewal of neighborhoods. If the investor type person purchases these kind of properties, what happens then is that they add to the significant number of rental properties that we already have in the city. And in an effort to encourage people to maintain their neighborhoods and to improve the neighborhoods, this is what the program is about. So it's not really the big guy trying to get take over from the little guy or to leave the local or the neighborhood person out of it. It where our neighborhoods are improving, it's a help in reducing crime, and it also is an effort to increase the tax base in the city. So that's the rationale for the city program. It's a community development block grant program that funds these purchases. Thank you.
Tara Johnson.
Then when the redevelopment happens on the part of the city and not on the county, because we're not in the business of redevelopment, then will the little guys get to bid on that improved property?
Yes.
Thank you.
Leanne Paff.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was one that voted for it, and the reason I voted for it is we've been through this before with the Salem property on the north side of La Crosse, and what it does do, what it does is if we get it moving here, we get things back on the tax roll, and also with the property, previous properties that we've had, when we've had to have an appraisal and things like that, that adds expenses to it, and then there is no interest, and we end up selling for actually less than what we have an offer for right now of $30,000 from the city of La Crosse. So that was my feeling for voting for it. It is a win-win, I believe, for the county and for the city. Thank you.
Any other discussion? Seeing none, all in favor of the resolution say aye. Opposed, no? One no, Mr. Ebert. Two no's, Mr. Ebert and Mr. Burns. That resolution passes.
Item 439, I think we'll unanimously approve this, I hope. Approval for bids for sale of property. Whereas La Crosse County advertised for the sale of 5 separate parcels of property which were subject to prior tax foreclosure action, whereas sealed bids were received on March 30th, 2010 and opened by the county treasurer and facility director March 31st, 2010, and whereas the sale and appraisal value of the real estate was first advertised by the publication as required by law pursuant to 7569 Wisconsin statute. Whereas the response bids accepted by the Public Works Infrastructure Committee are attached here as Schedule A, should be in attached to this resolution. Now, therefore, it be resolved that La Crosse County Board does hereby approve the sale of parcels for which response bid was accepted by the Public Works Infrastructure Committee as indicated by Schedule A. Be it further resolved, the County Board Chair and County Clerk are hereby authorized to execute any documents necessary to accomplish the sale of said properties after approval by Corporation Counsel. The revenue from the tax delinquent property is first used to satisfy outstanding taxes. The remaining revenue is received into current fiscal year in the Treasurer's Department. I move for approval, Mr. Chairman.
Moved by Mr. Spiker, seconded by Jill Billings. Discussion or questions? Maureen Friedland.
Well,
Mr. Spiker, you can retain the floor.
Just point out to the board that all the minimum bids were either higher or one was exactly the same.
Thank you. Now, Maureen Friedland.
Well, I just have a question. I'm looking at the signatures on the bottom, and my question regards this, but also the one that we just voted on that seemed to have some, let's say, policy concerns in it. Why is it that corporate counsel recommends this and doesn't just review this?
Mr. Shepard, do you want to respond?
Well, you know, there are legal issues in maintaining tax delinquent properties. We have a risk involved. Somebody could get hurt on these properties that we would be responsible for. So I think that there is a reason to sell and get rid of them. You know, you get money for them, you get rid of the risk, and somebody can benefit from those properties to put them back on the tax rolls and use them for you know, legitimate purposes. So it's risk avoidance in these cases.
Okay, and if it's not too late to ask the question about the previous one, just as a matter of...
It's the same thing, because as I understand from talking to Mr. Lang and Mr. Spiropoulos, that house is seriously deteriorated. It could be vandalized, it could be burned. You know, oftentimes when these houses are abandoned, they do become a detriment to the neighborhood. It could be a crack house. It could be any number of things that would be have a risk to you know, the surrounding community. So I think that there is a good reason to recommend the sale of that property also.
Mr. Feehan.
I'm looking at the dollar amounts for these bids, and $10, $35, $50. There's no description of these properties, and am I to understand that these are parcels of land, possibly with buildings that, as the corporate counsel says, could be dangerous, and that's the reason that we're selling them? Or are these properties condemned? What's the reason for the low valuations?
Mr. Spiropoulos will answer that.
These are all parcels that were picked up when mapping was redone in the county. They're all slivers of land, very small parcels. All of the parties that bid on them were adjoining landowners, and that's typically what we see on these. The zoning department picks these up, like I say, as they're doing the new mapping, so we end up with these little slivers out there. And believe me, we want to give them and get them back out to the people that can use them. So,
any other questions or discussion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye. Opposed, no. Carried unanimously. You got your wish, Mr. Spiker.
Thank you. Item 440. This should be easier. Item 440, approved unanimously by the committee, donation for improvement of Mindoro County Park. Whereas citizens group called the Miss Mindoro Group has requested that La Crosse County accept a donation of $10,000 to be used toward improving the playground equipment at Mindoro County Park. Whereas the county board may accept donations or gifts for any public government purposes within the powers of the county pursuant to 5952-19 Wisconsin statute. Whereas the playground equipment at Mindoro County Park does not meet the current needs of children using that park, and equipment needs to be replaced with more updated structure for the children to play on. And whereas La Crosse County Facilities Department has carried forward the amount of $10,000 from a previous budget for its 2010 budget to improve playground equipment at Mindoro County Park. Whereas Public Works and Infrastructure Committee recommends that the county board accept the donation of $10,000 from Miss Mindoro Group, designated for improvement of Mindoro County Park playground equipment, and the facilities department be authorized to spend up to $10,000 from capital improvement budget and the county matching funds for this project. Now, therefore, it be resolved that La Crosse County Board does hereby accept the donation $10,000 from Miss Mindoro Group, designated for improvement of Mindoro County Park playground equipment, to be deposited in the facilities department capital improvement account for parks and campgrounds. Approves the additional expenditure from that account up to $10,000 in county matching funds to be used for the purchase and installation of playground equipment in a Mindoro County park. Be it further resolved that the finance department is authorized to make any necessary budget adjustments. Fiscal note, the facility department has budgeted its capital equipment account 1132-87-034 for parks and campgrounds, the amount of $10,000 for this project. Facilities department will prepare a request for proposal for playground equipment according to the county purchasing policy. I move for approval, Mr. Chairman.
Moving Mr. Spiker, second by Leon Paff. Any discussion or questions? Mr. Ebert.
So is it $20,000 total, $10,000 in contribution and $10,000 from our budget? And when it comes to picking this out, do we use a committee up from the Mindoro area to help select the playground equipment, or is that all done in-house?
Mr. Spiropoulos. Leon Paff gets to decide.
No, the Miss Mindoro group, the group that actually fundraised for this, is very much involved in the selection of it.
Okay, and I think that's appropriate, and I thank you for considering the committee. Thank you.
Anybody else? All in favor say aye. Opposed, no. Carried unanimously.
Item 441, approved unanimously by committee, approval for temporary lease with Water Place 1 LLC, whereas since the mid-1980s, Bikini Yacht Club deck has been a popular attraction with thousands of local residents and tourists and located between the waterfront and the Park Plaza property. Whereas BYC deck has been a pivotal element for adjoining marina now called South Bay Marine. Whereas Water Place One is planning on operating the South Bay Marina again this year with the boat operation running from May 1st, 2010 through November 30th, 2010. It is extremely important for them to be able to use the BYC deck and convenience store to accommodate the needs of their marine guests. And whereas to operate the BYC deck for the 2010 summer season, Water Place One proposes entering into a short-term lease with La Crosse County for a 2010 season. Whereas Water Place One agrees to the 2010 season to pay rent in the amount of $10,000, mow the grass, pick up the trash, provide water, electricity to the premises, and pay any costs associated with such utilities on the lease premise. Now, therefore, be resolved that the County Board Chair is authorized to sign a lease agreement with Water Place One upon approval of Corporation Council to allow Water Place One to operate the BYC deck and convenience store during the 2010 season for a term to expire on November 30th, 2010. Fiscal note, no cost to La Crosse County. The rent will be deposited in Park Plaza property land rent account 1146-55090. I move for approval.
Moved by Mr. Spiker, seconded by Mr. Schrader.
I ask that the Corporation Council be heard on this.
Bill?
We've had a number of staff meetings. Mr. O'Malley has instructed us to develop additional lease terms than we've had in previous years to get this property ready for development. And there are certainly some significant changes in the lease this year, the first of which is the increase of the rental, the rent from $1,000 for the summer to $10,000. Additional important new lease terms are the conditions that within 30 days from the termination date of the lease that they have to remove all of the building structures and the underground fuel tank from our property. And that's extremely important in proceeding with development of the Park Plaza property in the future. They've agreed to those terms. We've had a number of back and forth discussions with them and revisions of the lease, but I think what we have in place now is something that will be beneficial to La Crosse County and enable us to proceed in the future with this project.
Mr. Malley, anything you want to add?
This is ultimately the first step in cleaning up more loose ends, including easements and working with the city to get this property ready for sale. The market has been stagnant for some time, but if we get through this season and are in a position next year to actually be able to accept proposals and clean up the loose ends between us and the adjacent property owners, we should be in a much better position. And in working closely with Chairman Doyle as well and asking for his input, we want to keep putting our best foot forward to make sure that this property is ready for sale and ready for development, which it has not been. Everyone's tried, both the city and us and the Redevelopment Authority. I think the market is going to turn around. We need to be in a better position with the adjacent landowner to be ready for development when the market turns around. And it includes a number of layers, easements, forest main. There's a number of utility issues that have been resolved by the City of La Crosse. We'll continue to work with them in partnership, but this is the first step in really getting us to a position where we can improve the entryway to our community. And part of this will also be that you'll see some improvements in grass and planting and some other things. So at least initially, you'll start to see some at least improvement when you drive across the river and come into our community. Long term, for next building cycle, I think we'll have a lot more to report to you and to work with the city as partners and with the adjacent landowner to be able to market this property.
Jeff Schrader.
Part of this agreement, I would assume, includes remediation of the fuel tank area, hazardous sites on that lot?
Yes, that's a very important provision that we added to this. If there is an environmental problem that results from the removal of that tank, that they have to remediate the site, we will be getting a performance bond from them in the amount of $30,000 to enable us to remediate those problems if they fail to do so. So that was an added provision that was included this time.
But as an additional note, the testing thus far indicates that there doesn't seem to be any problem, but it will be checked more thoroughly when the tank is removed. Tara Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If we were not entering into this lease agreement with Water Place One, whose response, and you had not successfully negotiated these terms, including the remediation and other site cleanup stuff, whose responsibility would it be to make those improvements?
Well, throughout the years that we've had leases, we've made it very clear in the leases that that the structure and the fuel tank was their property. So, theoretically, it was their problem, but, it always falls back on the landowner if the leaseholder doesn't do something. So I think it was significant that we were able to negotiate these terms in there to clarify that, in fact, it is their problem, and we will get the performance bond to ensure that they do the cleanup.
Thank you, and I applaud your aggressive negotiating.
Ralph Geary.
Thank you. How does their insurance work? Are we the also insured or a limit, or how do we protect ourselves there?
We have an insurance clause that's always been in there that they have to have an additional insured provision. So that I can tell you. Just give me a second.
I'm just thinking of the nature of the business and it's near water.
It's a million general liability. There was a provision in there on liquor liability, but they have indicated to us that they're not going to seek a liquor license this year, so there won't be any alcohol or beer sold at that site. There's an excess liability umbrella, if you will, of a million over the general liability. So, yeah.
For people who aren't familiar with it, that building itself is what mostly on our land and just a little sliver on their land. It jumps the property line. It's just a mess down there. So having worked this out is going to make things just so much cleaner for the whole project. This is a very good step in the right direction. Monica Cruz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have a couple questions. The first one is the proposed leaseholder, Water Place One, also a potential purchaser of this property down the line? Have they expressed interest in that?
Certainly, they have an interest. We've had many discussions, and we can have long discussions describing every fit and start and close to marriage that we've had, but we haven't gotten there. They could be one of the proposers, but by no means do we want them to be the only consideration. We want to be in a position to be able to market this and get the highest and best use and most tax base on that. That's always been the interest of both the city, the Redevelopment Authority, and the county, and I think we're going to be in that position next year. So we're hoping that they're interested, but we want to have the highest and best use and most tax base on that as quickly as possible.
And then my other question is, if they aren't going to run this as a bar, as the Bikini Yacht Club was, what are they actually going to be doing there? No liquor, no?
People can have fun on boats without
no,
liquor.
No, I'm just wondering, what are they? What is? I'm just wondering what the point is.
Well, access is a big part of it.
Okay.
We own that big chunk of land, but they own that narrow strip that blocks that land from the water. So there are people park on our land, and then they cross our land to get to the water. So if nothing else, even if they use it for no other purpose than walking from where they park in our land to get to the water, that serves that purpose. But they will have the building. They're not selling gas out of there either? Is that my understanding, or are they?
No, they've indicated that they're going to abandon the fuel tank also. So basically what they're doing is leasing out the boat slips. That's really all it's going to amount to, from at least the description that they provided to us.
And if they needed to buy things, there's that grocery store right there at the Pettibone, or across over at the other Pettibone Boat Club. So either of those places. So this will work out fine for them, I'm sure. Other questions, Mr. Spiker?
Maybe Bill or Steve mentioned that the rent went from $1,000 last year to $10,000 for 2010. So whoever, good negotiating, whoever did that. Thank you.
I believe that was the county board chair. When you look at how much money they're making off those boat slips, I thought we should get our share too. So, and I suggested it; those guys accomplished it. Anybody else? All right. All in favor of the resolution, say aye. Opposed, no. Carried unanimously.
Item 4-42. There's an incorrection on the vote. The vote was 5-4. One opposed, and one was excused. Approval of solid waste recycling collection evaluation. Whereas due to changes occurring across the country in how solid waste and recyclables are collected, improvements are available in such areas as customer service, work safety, collection costs. Whereas La Crosse County has made a significant financial commitment to the landfill complex and to the French Island RDF facility pursuant to the contract with Northern State Power. And whereas any changes in how the cities of La Crosse and Onalaska manage and fund solid waste and recycling collection services will impact La Crosse County solid waste disposal system. Whereas the evaluation will provide information to the county and city policymakers and potential options available to future solid waste recycling collection services, including issues related to customer service, sustainability, coordination of services among different local government bodies. Whereas the NSP and the governing bodies of the cities of La Crosse and Onalaska have agreed to contribute to the cost of the study based on tonnage delivered from each municipality. Whereas the study will be performed by Fourth Infrastructure Environmental Services, LLC, pursuant to its existing agreement for professional services with La Crosse County under a proposal to provide such services at a cost not to exceed $50,000. Now, therefore, be resolved that the County Board does hereby prove false to perform the solid waste and recycling collection evaluation for a cost not to exceed $50,000 pursuant to an addendum to its existing agreement with the county, and the Finance Department is authorized to make any necessary budget adjustments. Cross County share $22,500, budgeted in Ord 26, Ash Monofil expansion. Account 64056 will be transferred to solid waste operations, 6500 to 64056. Balance of $27,500 pays as follows: $5,000 by the Northern State Power, remaining $22,500 prorated between the cities of La Crosse and Onalaska based on tonnage delivered on a county landfill. I move for approval, Mr. Chairman.
Moved by Mr. Spiker, second by Arlene Benrode. Discussion. Mr. Bina.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm kind of curious about this. We got a big proposal a couple of months ago in regards to something along those lines, and I read it through, and it really didn't say a lot. It didn't say that it was going to be exclusively for the cities, and when I asked, I guess the out county is not going to be probably involved in this. I guess I'd kind of... You know, what exactly are we going to study? Are we going to sort garbage more than we are? Because it didn't say that in that whole 10-page brief we got. Are we going to recycle plastics in different ways? And is it or isn't it going to be the out county too? I just don't know what we're going to do with this study.
I'm going to ask Hank Cook to respond to that.
Thank you. My name is Hank Cook, and for the new people here, I am your garbage man, and I do love garbage.
All right.
You asked a number of questions, and let's see if I can answer all of them. One of the first things you asked is, does this include some of the out of the metropolitan city areas? This study was designed to be focused on the metropolitan areas because of the large volume of waste that they produce. That doesn't mean we're going to exclude the other communities. In that scope of services that we provided you at the last meeting, we are intending to meet with them and discuss their input, their views on this. When we do the study and we come up with the findings and some of the information, we will share it with them also. But we did not want to create a situation where the urban area or the rural area is telling how the rural area is telling the urban area how they should collect the garbage, as the rural area would not like the city people to say, here's how you should run your drop-off sites. That was one of your first questions. The second question you asked, what is this study going to tell us? As you've heard on a number of case times, this study will not provide recommendations. What it's going to do is provide information and alternatives to the policymakers. The policymakers will then decide in the city of La Crosse, the city of Onalaska, and the county what things they would like to see. There's a lot of things happening right now in our country on automated collection, where they have arms that reach out from the truck and they pick up a large container. There's a lot of different ways of recycling. There's single stream, where you put all of your recyclables into one container. There's dual stream, where you keep them separated, and they have some impacts. One of the big things that the study is going to address is how this is being funded by the cities. Both City of Onalaska and La Crosse, it's on the tax levy. In the state of Wisconsin, we've passed the tipping point, and more communities have gone to assessments and special fees versus tax levy. And so we want to look at the pros and cons on that. Again, we're not going to make a recommendation. We're going to show the pros and cons, allow that to be debated by the policymakers so that they can make the choice that they want to go with. That was two of the questions. Did I answer all of them?
I'm not sure where you're, we're collecting the garbage already. Are we going to do it differently? That sounds like the way you may go, but are we going to, there's what, something like 13 kinds of plastics? Are we going to start having everybody put their plastic jugs in each of 17 different containers or something? Or, I don't know where you're going, and, it's nice to do a study, but you ought to have some idea about where we're going to end up when we're there, and it doesn't seem like you know exactly where you're going to go.
Isn't that the purpose of a study?
I can set a direction for you. And right at the very beginning of the scope, and scope of services, there's three big things we want to accomplish. We want to provide better service to citizens in garbage collection, okay? And that means safety, that means convenience. And I'll tell you right off, as a citizen, if I had to put my plastic in 13 different containers, I would look at it and say, I'm sorry, but that's not convenient, okay? The second thing is we want to look at, in the nation right now, the cost of collection is going up very rapidly. And what we want to focus on is how can we minimize the impact of increased costs of collection through better systems like automation, combination of routes, and other things. The study is going to look at that. I can't tell you what it's going to find, and I can't tell you what the policymakers will choose. But I can tell you that's what we will study, that's what we will bring forth. The last thing deals with how the programs are funded, because we're finding more communities are taking garbage away from tax levy and doing like surface water, sewage, and other things going on to special assessments.
Okay, that helps. Mr. Feehan.
Is it really necessary to have a $50,000 study to get the kind of information we're looking for?
Yes.
And why would we not be able to look at comparable communities and what they're doing and draw some conclusions from that without spending $50,000? And one other quick question. Do we currently have the highest rates for garbage disposal in the state of Wisconsin for people that want to dump?
Do we need to spend $50,000 on this study? The city of La Crosse was negotiating with Folt before we became involved on this, and the study that they had outlined was $75,000. So working with the city of Onalaska, the county, and the city of La Crosse, we were able to find ways to bring that scope of services down. We were able to find studies, and we brought them into the meetings with the two cities to show them that there's been work done by other communities. We can take advantage of this. That's how we were able to reduce the cost. The importance of this study is you have to remember the city of La Crosse spends about $1 million a year on garbage collection. A typical contract will run about 5 years. If they rebid this contract and they make a mistake in scoping out those services, this $50,000 study, or their portion of roughly $22,000, is insignificant compared to the tremendous costs that they will incur. Your final question is the rate of disposal in La Crosse County the highest in the state? It is. It is $68. It is the highest. The cost for residents in La Crosse that they pay for garbage collection, disposal, and recycling is not the highest in the state. And I've been looking at that, and what we find is that our system promotes competition in the business sector. The citizens are benefited by that. And I would not measure also the costs of a solid waste system based on disposal. I think you have to have a bigger long-term view, because some of these communities that have low costs, they may be facing millions of dollars in future liabilities and remediation. You can't just look at disposal costs and judge a solid waste disposal system.
Tara Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Since I chastised him earlier in the meeting, I want to come to Supervisor Bina's rescue and just make sure that we have a clear understanding from those who are not in the city of La Crosse or the city of Onalaska, what kind of a time frame we're looking at for other municipalities to become active participants in this discussion. In particular, I think of the town of Shelby that I represent does an excellent job, and I know that you've had conversations with some of those folks. You know, we do garbage, full recycling, all those good things, and there is some sense that other municipalities are feeling left out. So what can we tell them about when we might become part of the active portion of this study process or the resulting steps?
If this resolution is approved tonight, then we would expect Folt to begin this work on May 1st. We would expect that in May or June that we will be conducting interviews with all the municipalities in this county, so that within 2 months they will be involved in providing input and other things. I suspect we will do a public informational meeting as we're gathering this data. That was not in Folt's work, and rather than suggest it to Folt and then do a change order and incur additional costs, we can do that in the solid waste department, invite those people in and share that information. The study should be done by late summer or early fall. It's been designed to be done rapidly so that if we want to make changes next year, we can do that. And so I expect that in fall, early fall, that we will be meeting back with those municipalities saying, this is what we found. If those municipalities, the out municipalities, if they choose to take some of that information and say, we're going to use this, we're going to use this in our bidding process, we've decided we want to pursue changes, by the end of this year, they can be using that.
Thank you. I have a couple questions. I assume this is contingent, and correct me if I'm wrong, upon La Crosse and Onalaska also approving their share. Is that correct?
Yes, and they have done that.
And they have already approved it. Both of them have.
Yes, and we have contacted Excel. We asked if they would like to be involved. They thought this was a very worthwhile study, and they pledged $5,000 for it.
Okay. And then one other question. We were the highest in the state even before you got the job last year, right?
Yes. Okay. Thank you.
Want to make sure we're not blaming you for anything. Ray Ebert.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. It appears that this study is more how to pick up garbage, how to fund that pickup, and it doesn't seem to me the county is involved in either of those two steps. So I guess I don't understand why we're as involved in paying half of this fund.
That's a very good question, because we don't have garbage trucks. We don't have people picking it up. How garbage is picked up by collection agencies has a lot to do with where it ends up. And waste security is an extremely important issue to us in the county. If that waste is picked up and it's taken out of this county, and some of that is occurring now, then we don't get the revenues from that waste, and our system suffers then from a smaller economy of scale. And so we're very interested in what options will be placed in front of the city of Onalaska and La Crosse that will not only improve service and not only cut costs for those cities, but will also create greater security that waste stays within our area. So that's the interest of La Crosse County in this study.
Now, is the reason that some of that waste is being trucked out of La Crosse County is because we are the highest in the state?
The reason that waste is being trucked out of the county is that some business people, and there's perhaps more than one reason, some business people choose to dispose of their waste at a landfill-based system, which is the lowest on the hierarchy of waste management, and it is a short-term view of costs. La Crosse County, for decades, has made a commitment to a higher-valued system, which includes waste-to-energy and other components. So there's a business reason, and it differs in the values that we've set for our system. There's also another reason. Waste management has a policy of internalizing their own waste. So they are taking approximately 8,000 tons of waste out of the La Crosse County area, and it goes to the Berlin site over by Oshkosh. They do that to internalize their profitability and not share that in other communities. It's a business reason. They're doing that, and it's happening.
Okay, and how does all this affect our contract with XL? It seems if the trash going out certainly would have an effect, but also if we're going to do this pickup different, I would assume then less will be burned if they're doing more recycling, and won't that affect, so there'd be a positive and a negative.
Again, that's an absolutely excellent question, because yes, recycling may take more waste away from XL, but that is not a high percentage. What we're seeing happening in the La Crosse community area is that in some cases, people contaminate their waste with unacceptable material that cannot be taken to XL. And when they do that, in the contracts or the provisions of their contract, they are allowed to take that to their transfer station. And once it's at their transfer station, they can take it out. So if this study can identify improvements in the collection systems that avoids unacceptable waste material going into the waste stream, we have a chance of increasing the waste that goes to the XL plant. So that's another reason we're very interested in how this study goes.
Okay, yeah, and again, I guess it just seems that La Crosse County is paying substantially more for the study than we're actually getting out of it. It seems that the advantage is much more to the two cities and eventually, the other things, not near as much to La Crosse County. And that's an observation. It may or may not be true, but I thank you for your answers.
Well, I actually shared your observation, and when we originally scoped out that work, in our first meetings, and we realized this study was going to be around $50,000. I did not think it was in the interest of La Crosse County to fund that whole study. Fortunately, the discussions at that meeting with the city of Onalaska and La Crosse, we came to an agreement that they would share approximately half, they will share half that cost. I believe that is a fair sharing then, and that is a great value to us.
Hank, can you also explain the source of La Crosse County's money that's going into this?
It comes from the tipping fees at the landfill site.
Which are paid by?
The users of the site, so that would include the waste management, the harders. It would include the municipalities that bring waste to the site.
And beyond La Crosse County.
And beyond La Crosse County,
our whole service area.
That's correct.
So this isn't just La Crosse County. When we say it's La Crosse County, it's really not just La Crosse County's.
That is correct. About 80% of our waste comes from La Crosse County. The other 20% comes from a mixture of Buffalo, Trempealeau, Houston, and Wabasha counties.
Steve?
If I might just make two quick points. One of the reasons it's in our interest as La Crosse County to understand what the choices are that the two largest cities make is we are legally and financially obligated for the system that we have. We need a certain volume of waste to be able to retire the debt, for example, the over $10 million that was put into upgrading the scrubbers and everything in the smokestacks at French Island, as well as the benefit of the system. While it is quite high in cost, we're not going to have to relocate a landfill for many, many years into the future. It would be easy to change the current economics of the solid waste system by taking as much garbage as possible, filling it up quickly, and then being in a position as a community to have to relocate a new landfill. That was a decision that was made many years ago by this county, was to see long-term into the future to invest in waste energy, invest in improving the economics as well as the environmental protection by investing into the smokestack, as well as being in a position to make the landfill last as long as possible. So to cherry-pick and take away some of the garbage, it changes the economics of this, and that's why we have a vested interest in whatever decisions the two largest cities make of what decisions they decide on how they want to provide pickup and those kinds of services. We're all in this together, but that was a decision made prior to many of us even being here. Many of the board members weren't here at that time. I know I wasn't the minister, but we've invested and pledged our full faith and obligation to the debt service there, as well as to make this landfill last as long as possible. I would imagine there aren't too many towns that would volunteer to have the next landfill in their neighborhood. And we are in a position that we can expect that landfill as currently licensed and into the future. How many years, Hank, are we expecting?
We have 28 right now approved.
And that's not every amount of capacity. It may last longer with additional licensing. So there is an interest for all of us to be involved in this, even though we do, as a decision-making body, have decided we're going to spend more per ton because of the long-term benefits. Again, that's always a decision that in the long term a county board could change, but that's what this community has decided to do well before my arrival, and many board members were here at that time.
So
we still have a couple people that haven't had a chance to ask a question yet.
Thank you, my good friend.
So, Ralph, are you done? I'm sorry.
I wasn't. But
go ahead.
Now you got me all flustered.
That's right.
I'll pass. Thank you.
Ralph Geary.
Okay. You've told us that our service area currently is not having any difficulty meeting the tonnage requirements because we're not going to try to expand it right now, right? We're not trying to expand our service area because we can make the tonnage easily?
Are you referring to Xcel then?
No, I'm talking about us. We have to give Xcel 70,000 tons a year or whatever. You said we're not actively seeking other counties around us because we're currently able to easily maintain that level? Is that what our status is right now?
With Xcel, our agreement with them is to provide 73,000 tons per year.
Right.
We were very fortunate that when this recession hit and our tonnages did drop, we were in the process of negotiating some changes in the contract, and we were able to negotiate for 1 year that there would be no penalties if we fell under it, and we did. For this year, there are some other things that occurred, and we were able to negotiate another agreement that we can be at 70,000 versus 73.
Right.
I've been watching the tonnage numbers, and for 2 years we would not have made the 73,000 tons because of the recession and other things. I hope we're coming out of that. I have a concern that waste is continuing to be diverted out of our area, and that if we don't get on that, on top of that strategic issue, we may reach a day when we cannot meet those minimums.
Okay, sorry the interruption. What happened to flow control?
I think, didn't the Supreme Court say you can't do that?
We can't do that. Is that what happened to that?
It's a very complicated thing, and it depends upon which state you're living in.
Well, I'm assuming I'm living in Wisconsin. What if?
Well, you're right then. The only way you can do flow control in the state of Wisconsin is if you direct the waste to a publicly owned resource recovery facility or a dirty materials recovery facility. Excel is a privately owned, so that would not qualify. We do not have a MRF or a material to separate out recyclable materials in this county. So we do not have those two options available to us.
Okay, and then you said, you're talking about lowering costs to the municipalities, but it sounds like you're going to increase costs to the haulers. How's that going to work out?
I hope that actually the haulers will benefit from looking at automated systems, better systems that will minimize their costs. If they choose not to lower the prices they're charging the cities, their profitability will go up. I hope, maybe I'm naive, but I hope both the municipalities and the collection companies together will find a happy medium where they both maintain a good profitability and they save money for the citizens.
I saw one last hand. I saw two hands, Bill Feehan and then Margaret Wood. Margaret Wood.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do serve on the Solid Waste Policy Board, and it is really a very good mix of everybody being at the table, the haulers, the other counties, the cities, and we're also responding to our efforts towards sustainability and responding to the active groups that are trying to increase our green capacities. That being said, I have seen the work that FOTH does. They are a very credible group to get a report from. It's understandable. They spend the time answering many of our questions. I do think that this information is critical for us as we move forward. Not only is it a monetary issue for us, but you know, we have adopted a philosophy that has, and we have spent money toward that, you know, reburying the old landfill, trying to make our plans go far. So I really want to wholeheartedly support this, and I think the county will be well served in doing so.
Okay, we'll do this one on the computer. All in favor, vote yes. Opposed, vote no. This requires 2/3 vote of the full board. Uh-oh, an error has occurred in the voting system. All in favor say yes.
Yes.
Opposed, no.
No.
Raise your hand if you're a no. The no's are Mr. Ebert and Mr. Feehan. That resolution passes. That it for you, Mr. Spiker?
Yes, sir.
Thank you. Suggestions for future agenda topics. Anybody have any? Mr. Geary?
Yes, we haven't heard from Mr. Taunt in a while. Maybe you could give a kind of a generic overview of, and for the new members, about contract negotiations and binding arbitration and how that all works. You know, kind of a generic presentation. Doesn't have to be specific to ours.
Okay.
Either one, planning or whatever, you know.
Sure, we'll do that. Terry Johnson?
I think I asked this in executive committee, but especially given a couple of agenda items tonight, if the full board can hear and get information about the ERA dollars that have come into La Crosse County, not just that La Crosse County has received as in the grants, but SBA loans, monies to any and all ERA dollars. If we can get some kind of a report, that would be great.
Okay. Maureen Friedland.
I just wanted to suggest that everyone on the way out, if they don't want their papers from tonight, if they're not going to really use them after they save them, if they just dump them over there in the garbage can so that they can be recycled.
We do our own recycling here, so we try to follow our own rules. All right. Anybody else? Bob Kyle. Thank you. Seconded by Bill Brockmiller. All in favor say aye. Opposed no. Carried unanimously.